Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Greetings from Florida and Panhandle here up in the upper left corner. I had a fun day yesterday. My bike is now fixed. I'm now back bike riding, and hopefully we'll get back in shape. And so all of you that haven't done it for years and years, you know, get your bike back. You know, get a new seat. Get a bigger. The seats are coming bigger now. They're actually comfortable, and so that's a good thing. So get back healthy. Get out in the fresh air. It was a gorgeous day yesterday. It was cool, and so I just blasted 6 miles out. It's the first time I've ridden in several months, and so that's a good thing. So yeah, it's, you know, get healthy. You know, just because you're getting older, we all are. Don't worry about it. Get healthy. Go out and do stuff. And so it definitely makes you feel better. So between the gym and the bike, you know, I hope to be in not quite Olympic status, but we'll see what happens. All right. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on today. There's a lot going on in the world right now as far as confirming another leftist Marxist to the Supreme Court and a bunch of other crazy things. I think she's going to get confirmed. I just don't think there's enough, you know, decent Democrats and conservative Republicans to stop this. That's my gut feeling at this point. But the thing is, they got the wrong one. You know, the title of the show today, hey, Brandon, you picked the wrong black woman. Which leads to the obvious question, well, who's the right black woman? Well, the first person that comes to mind is Candace Owens. She would be fabulous, but I think she's a bit young. Needs some more experience, needs to do a little more constitutional research, delve into the Supreme Court cases, and really learn how corrupt and terrible that branch of government really is and how most of what they do is illegal. And so that's a good thing to do. I was thinking, actually, Professor Carol Swain. And if you've watched Prager University at all, she's the one that's on there. She's on One American News a lot. She'd be fabulous. Now, is she a judge or a lawyer? I don't think she's ever been a judge. I don't even know if she's a lawyer, but that's not the point. See, one of the things about the Supreme Court that nobody knows is you don't even have to be a lawyer to serve as a justice on the Supreme Court. And that actually makes a lot of sense if you look at the context of the way this country started, in that you know, privilege, rank, title are not necessarily, you know, things that are virtues. And so in the same way, we haven't really thought about this. In fact, I didn't think about it just right now when I mentioned it. But, you know, the idea of going to Harvard, Judge Jackson's been to Harvard. She's got like 2 degrees from Harvard. Well, that's special. She's worked in D.C. all her life. She's a political hack. Okay, she's a leftist political Marxist hack. Let me just say that. But the idea that if you don't believe in title and an aristocracy and or a monarchy, you know, a line of succession. In other words, it's your privilege. You know, so she's operating on black privilege, on aristocrat privilege. She's operating on leftist Marxist privilege. She's got a whole bunch of privilege. She's got a lot of privilege. Okay, so that alone disqualifies her, as far as I'm concerned. Anybody with that much privilege, you know. And first of all, I don't want justices coming out of Harvard and Yale for a while, because so many of them have, and they suck, frankly. I'm not sure where Clarence Thomas went to school, but I'm pretty sure it's not Harvard or Yale. Sam Alito, I have no idea. He may very well have gone to one of those two schools. But the point is, we've got too many schools from elitist institutions, you know, from elitist families who go to elitist prep schools like Phillips Exeter Academy, and they're all elitist. And the nice thing about this country used to be that title didn't matter. And so these people are titled. They're like titled landed aristocracy. And so there's a club. There's a club of Supreme Court justices, and there's only certain people that get asked to join the club. And every once in a while, someone like Clarence Thomas comes along, which sort of defeats that, and they do an incredible job. And so that's what I see happening with the court. They picked the wrong woman, picked the wrong black woman. And so Carol Swain, I remember her. I've heard her interviewed. I've heard her, you know, a bunch of times. And what's fascinating about her is she made this one video talking about the Democrat Ku Klux Klan and the real history of the Democrat Party. And I believe that's the one she did, is the history of the Democrat Party, and includes, of course, slavery in the Confederacy. The Confederacy was Democrat, and includes, you know, Bull Connor and Ole Miss and, you know, all the segregation folks, Jim Crow and all those laws were from Democrats. And so she talks about the history of the Democrat Party. And so I think she's got a really good handle on the things that a Supreme Court justice would have to know, which is how to settle cases. And that's really what the job is. I got Josh from Illinois on the line. I'll get to you in a little bit. Let me just put your name and your phone number here. We're expecting some crazy things to possibly happen today. There's a good chance that Stuart Rhodes, head of the Oath Keepers, will call in from jail. I've tried to coordinate that with my congressman here in the 1st District of Florida, Matt Gaetz. Don't know if it's going to happen, but they said his office certainly knows that Stuart Rhodes is calling in. And so, you know, as Matt and Matt Gaetz and Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene and some other folks were around the D.C. jail and talked about the D.C. jail, and I think Marjorie Taylor Greene actually went into the D.C. jail, they have not done what I would expect to close down the D.C. jail. And Stuart Rhodes isn't there. He's in some other one of the other federal prisons somewhere, you know, awaiting trial on trumped-up charges. And it's an interesting pun from the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. And of course, I'm dying to ask, you know, Matt Gaetz, the question I wanted to ask any member of Congress, which is what happened, you know, in the hours where the 7 hours that are blacked out of the congressional record, what happened during those 7 hours when Trump supporters were walking around up top that everybody blamed as an insurrection, which is really just the cover. It's the distraction for the real insurrection that took place under the Capitol for those 7 hours to convince enough people, enough representatives and senators to vote for Brandon. When seven states had Trump electors from the state legislatures, and state legislatures take precedence over in the Constitution over the governors and the secretaries of state who were pushing Brandon electors. So we're still at January 6th, folks. We're still at January 6th, 2021. The clock has not advanced beyond the point of January 6th, so Brandon could not have been inaugurated, and he certainly can't be in the White House because we have not done the official constitutional challenge. We haven't done it. And this didn't even come up at any of the hearings. I watched them. You know, I've been watching the hearings. I got the videos on my Facebook page. Get them from C-SPAN. You know, C-SPAN, they don't mess with it. So they actually let you hear the hearing. You know, good, bad, and ugly, the whole bit. You get that. Let's get into Josh and get his opinion on the fact that Brandon picked the wrong black woman. And I got several reasons for this, and I'm going to go through them. But it's going to be kind of fun to have Josh here. And we've got Cindy Cagle coming up at 6:30. So at the bottom of this hour, and then we'll talk medical freedom. But in the meantime, Josh, good morning. How you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm frustrated with the Supreme Court picks because they picked the wrong black woman.
Everything is ridiculous. Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah, that's
situation
a good
normal.
Take. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, because you know, because okay. So with Kavanaugh, you had some random broad that lived.
Don't say
in
broad.
A town
don't
near
say broad
him.
On my show. Josh, I'll say right now. Don't say broad on my show. Just don't. Start again.
Blasey Ford made an accusation.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize. I thought
that's okay. Blasey Ford is a tragic figure and a criminal figure. Criminal because she came up after the hearing. She was brought up by Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, do you know
she,
what
she made
was
an accusation to which
that,
she had no knowledge whatsoever. I mean, and Feinstein, and she was brought
and,
there specifically
yeah.
to sabotage the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Greg,
well, I didn't really support
I
anyway.
Thought this was my talking time. I thought this. I'm sorry. I thought this was my
what?
Talking time. Yeah, she has.
Well, no, we go back and
no
forth.
Evidence.
What's that?
Oh, huh.
We go back.
This is that. This is that pong game from the 70s. All
no,
right.
this is ADHD talk show host. Is what it is.
I can respect that.
okay, go ahead.
So,
but I got lots to cover this half hour. So you got to start. You got to get your points faster because I got a lot
okay,
of things
okay,
to
I'll
cover.
Okay, I'll be quick. Right. I'll be quick.
Go.
So, I hope, and I have not seen anybody treat anybody as terribly in the committee as they've treated Kavanaugh. So no, I'm done after that. No.
Okay.
They're not
well, hang on. Listen.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you're good. But just I want to talk about some things. And like I said, I'm going to leave your line live so you can feel free to jump in. Just jump in because you know me. I'm going to keep going anyway. So I got a bunch of things that bother me about this whole nomination process. First of all, Judge Jackson will not answer questions. She's first thing, you know, she's about to lie when she says, "Thank you, Senator, for that question." And then comes the lie. And then comes the filibuster. And it's like her whole purpose with Republicans is to take up their time, to waste their time so they get the minimum chance to answer questions. And she just doesn't want to answer stuff. You know, and she didn't answer hardly anything. She didn't answer anything controversial. The fact that she is sympathetic towards pedophiles and people that commit sexual assaults. She didn't answer any of her leniency towards, you know, letting folks out for COVID. She certainly wouldn't talk about the 1619 Project or Demand Justice or any of those other things. But we will. I was looking for the clip this morning from Senator Marsha Blackburn. And if you want to see a really good cross-examination of somebody, listen to Senator Marsha Blackburn because she was brilliant. You can go to C-SPAN or you can just request, you know, just find hers on YouTube. But I was looking for the clip where she talked about the Second Amendment, because I read this in one of the other articles. I've got like 12 of them, you know, for today's show. And what she talked about was, and this is a question I'll ask Josh about this too, is that the view of a lot of leftists and the view of, that came out of Heller, one of the biggest problems with the Heller decision, is that they talked about in D.C. that the Second Amendment, you know, provides you a right to keep and bear arms in your home, which is the most ridiculous proposition I've ever heard. The whole point of keeping and bearing arms is that you can defend yourself outside your home. Otherwise, what's the point of having a Second Amendment if you can't defend yourself outside your home and you can't form a militia when a tyrannical government forms against you? And so that, to me, is just an absurd thing on its face. Josh, have you heard that? You're up in Illinois. You've got some pretty restrictive gun laws up there. I don't know if you heard that clause at all, but what do you think?
Yeah, no, I have an immediate response to that, actually. Your ability to speak comes from you having vocal cords, and we created a language over, like, I don't even know how many thousands of years. Yeah, your Second Amendment is your ability to defend yourself. I don't know. It's up to you. It's between you and whatever God you believe in. But if you curl your fingers in your right hand, you can form a fist. What is the point of the fist? If you're not attacking, you're defending yourself. I don't understand.
Well, you can hold it in the air and look defiant. You know, there's a lot of points of a fist. Well, you're getting off topic, though. But does the Second Amendment, do you see any, do you understand the logic of the left saying that the Second Amendment only applies in the home?
No, absolutely not. Okay. You can defend yourself everywhere you go. You do realize that there are, like, Indiana just signed on to the constitutional carry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
We have like 26 states now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to talk to some folks that are involved in our gun reports. I want to get a bill that takes the highway funds. And just as the Congress forced the states to raise the drinking age to 21 by withholding highway funds, which the Supreme Court actually allowed, by the way, which they probably shouldn't have, but it's kind of interesting. Anyway, I'd be curious to do – I've got to look more into this, but it'd be interesting if Congress withheld highway funds to states that do not have constitutional carry, and that would include Florida right now, just to bring states into compliance with the Constitution. Whereas I think it was coercion, and I think it was unconstitutional to withhold highway funds to raise the drinking age. It would certainly be constitutional to encourage states, you know, to actually comply with the Constitution, which is something they should be doing anyway. So in that respect, I think it would be worth withholding highway funds. Let me get your take on that. Then I'm going to mute you for a while. I want to get through some stuff because I've only got about 17 minutes and I got a lot to cover. So let me get your take on that, and then I'm going to ramble for a bit.
It's actually a fair assessment. If you are doing anything, and you know, if you're a leader of a state in America, because we have the centralized government that's called the federal government, and then if you're a leader or a constituent of any state, yes, no, buddy, you're right. You should absolutely pressure every single state to contribute to that right, because if you can ball up a fist, you can fight. And we just so happened to come across something to shoot metal projectiles out of a barrel. I don't know. This is weird. This entire thing is weird. I'm sorry.
Let me put you on hold for just a little bit, and let me do a little bit of rambling here, and I'm going to bring you back in a little bit later, probably during the medical freedom bar. We'll see how it goes, but I got a lot of things to cover. And so back to Judge Jackson. She supports critical race theory and the 1619 Project. In fact, I have a huge article on the 1619 Project. Basically, it's a huge lie. It's a huge lie that says this is a racist country. It was formed by racists, you know, for the preservation of slavery. It's a bunch of crap is what it is. And this other – and critical race theory basically teaching – it's a racist program in the schools that teaches, you know, white people bad, black people good. And so my problem is that I couldn't find a decent article talking about this in terms of racist, you know, beliefs of Judge Jackson, because I believe if you support the 1619 Project and think, you know, white people bad, you know, people of color, let me get this straight before the critics start, you know, writing Blog Talk Radio. The current terminology, you know, that's minority folks, you know, good, white people bad, in both these two things. And critical race theory, racist theory is what it really is, taught in the schools, and the 1619 crap that says that the United States was started with slavery. And what the article documents very carefully is that we've had slavery since we've had people. Native Americans or American Indians in this country had slaves for tens of thousands of years. Africa's had slavery. Europe's had slavery. In fact, a lot of Europeans were taken as slaves by the Barbary pirates in the Middle East. And so slavery has gone on, you know, then it became, you know, serfs, you know, peasants were virtual slaves. The Slavs in Eastern Europe, Slav is, you know, the English translation is slave. So the entire of Eastern Europe, you know, Ukrainians, Poles, Hungarians, all the folks here, Bulgarians, Romanians, all the Slavs of Eastern Europe were looked upon as slaves, you know, by Russia and Germany and fighting over the middle. So this kind of stuff that goes on all the time. And so we've got some just really massive problems, and no one's willing to come out and say it. I'll say, I think she's a racist. I think she believes in black privilege and she's a black supremacist, and she really wants to push forward her views. And if you believe in this critical racist theory in 1619 Project, you can't be anything but a racist. This other group that she belongs to, Demand Justice, I was looking up their website. They're pretty open. They're really open about who they are and what they do. Demand Justice wants to pack the court. They want to basically have the court be a leftist legislature, and they want to you know equal justice, you know, or equality or equity or whatever they're talking about. I didn't get a lot of chance to read it this morning, but basically this is a leftist Marxist group that wants to change the court into complete advocacy and be yet another legislature, except with the power to, quote, interpret the Constitution, which they really don't have, so they can keep overruling the Congress. And so that's something the Supreme Court can't do, but they seem to be able to do anyway. Other problems I have with her, she can't define what a woman is. If you watch, again, Senator Marsha Blackburn, she can't say. And this comes from that leftist, well, you know, your gender is what you think it is. No, your gender is whether you have an XX or an XY chromosome. It's very simple. Biology has determined that, you know, XX chromosomes make women and XY chromosomes make men. And we're different, obviously, physically, mentally, and everywhere else. Okay. That's not, you don't have to be a biologist to know that. There was a fascinating thing. I was watching the other, I think it was last night, this came on. And in fact, there was it was some sports stadium and someone was filming two people talking. And one of them, the woman, you know, said that, you know, what is this idiot doing? She can't define what a woman is, all right? And then this guy, this leftist, you know, metrosexual Twinkie, says, well, are you a biologist? You know, in other words, you have to be a biologist to tell, you know, what a man and a woman is? Oh, please, give me a break. So she looks at me and says, well, look, she says, that's absolutely ridiculous. She says, I'm not a vet, but I know what a dog is. You know, that is the best line in the world. So I'm going to keep using that. So she can't define what a woman is. Another thing about Judge Jackson, I think she is sympathetic to pedophiles and those who commit sexual assault. And you look at her sentences. She used the absolute minimum sentence in the sentencing guidelines for all these pedophiles and child porn offenders and all these other different things. And what's fascinating to me is that no one asked the question, if there were no minimum sentences, if there was no jail time at all, would you have let these people off with no jail time? I mean, that was the real question. And they didn't ask it, which is unfortunate. Senator Blackburn talked about the whole idea of compassionate release. I was just reading an article before the show. There's like 30,000 prisoners that wanted compassionate release because of COVID. They didn't want to catch COVID in prison. Okay, so we're in this weird situation in America where the prisoners were released so they wouldn't catch COVID, and the citizens who haven't done anything wrong were locked up in their homes. And, of course, that's where you get COVID because, like family members, like genetics, you know, COVID was transferred mostly in the home. And so that was that's an interesting thing, too. Anyway, so that was the thing she couldn't answer. Like I said, you can always tell when she was lying because she says, you know, thank you for asking the question. Mm-hmm. And then she proceeded to give that smug look on her face. Watch her face. Her face is fascinating, especially when she's talking to Republicans, just the contempt, you know, on her face for anything other than what she believes and for people that think like her. So it's not a question, you know, the old Obama line, you know, people like people that look like them. I don't agree with that. People like people who think like them. That's the lack of diversity. The real lack of diversity is thinking. What else? Okay, covered that. Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is a fascinating thing to me because it is the most illegal, unprecedented judicial activism, legislating from the bench. It is the worst decision the Supreme Court's ever come up with for several reasons. One, they're imposing a policy on all the states. They can't do that. The most important reason, of course, is that a lot of babies have died. And this idea, this is a question that never occurred to any of the senators, you know, is that to ask her, would you be in favor of a Roe v. Wade decision that mandated that the child's life be saved when a pregnancy is terminated with an abortion? And no one ever asked that question. And the reason I'm mentioning it here specifically is because we have a bill on that. One of our Action Radio bills at RightYourLaws.com separates in law the act of an abortion to terminate a pregnancy, but it mandates that you can't do that unless you can save the life of the baby. And no one's ever thought of this. I don't know why, but they haven't. And so that has the pro-choice component of where, you know, the big government is not, you know, telling women they can't terminate their pregnancy. But what they're saying is a condition, because we have a life to consider, the life of the baby. The pregnancy cannot be terminated with an abortion unless you can save the baby. And with medical science these days, that's pretty young. That's like, I guess, 22 to 24 weeks, depending on the child. And, of course, I like the expression preborn instead of unborn, because these are preborn kids. And so also, you know, and although I haven't incorporated in law yet, I'm still wrestling with how to do this exactly. Father's rights, you know, a man's right to be a parent if he chooses. In other words, if a woman wants to terminate a pregnancy, then I'm going to get Josh in on this one, because we do have a few minutes extra. I've covered most of what I wanted to. But this idea, now let me bring him on right now, actually. Let's get his line live here. So, Josh, what would you think of this? If abortion law was changed so that it was broken into two parts, there was the abortion part, which terminated the pregnancy, but that is only allowed if you can save the life of the baby. We break this automatic thing with an abortion where the baby's always killed. So I never understood that, you know, especially as science gets better and better and medical technology gets better and better. Why is it essential to an abortion to kill the baby, whereas, you know, preborn kids, you know, premature children, you know, are saved at ridiculously young ages? It just seems to me this weird contradiction that we have. Why can't we terminate a pregnancy and still save the life of the baby?
I can hold on. Calm that down a little bit. All right. So the reality of the situation is, if the mother is going to die by giving birth to the kid, that's the only justification ever to end it. It's never about the baby. If the baby can live and the mother can live, then I don't really want to hear anything. I don't know. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but again, this is something that, you know, well, the life of the mother. Well, who's to say the life of the mother can't be saved and the life of the baby can be saved? We don't know. You know, this is something that's never considered.
Okay, hold on. I love listening to my own voice, so let me repeat myself. The only time that it's okay to end the process is if the mother is going to die by continuing the process.
Okay, but what wouldn't you consider having the process go at least far enough that the baby can live? You know, if 2 weeks makes a difference.
No, buddy, once again, no, the baby should live the entire time.
Okay, yes. All right, so that's fine.
I'm saying for the baby to live and the mother to die, that's the only consequence. That's the only actual controversy here.
That's the only time that a pregnancy should be terminated.
Die,
okay, no, that's fine.
I'm just saying, if the mother has to die for the baby to live, when the mother can produce other babies later on.
I got to think about that. Let me get Pianki's view on this. Pianki, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Well, it should be the mother's. That should be her decision. If she wants to die so the baby can live, that's her decision.
Women do. Women have done that for as long as they've been pregnant.
I respect that.
Died in childbirth. Hold on, Josh.
I respect that.
Yeah, so that should be the decision. But, you know, one question I would ask her, because she opened up the whole thing when she said that she respects the U.S. Constitution, supports and respects the U.S. Constitution. I would have asked her, well, the decision was Supreme Court said that on interracial marriage, should the Supreme Court have made that decision, or should it have been left to the state? Well, she should have said that it should have been left to the state. Like the Constitution
Are you talking about the Supreme Court justice vote right now?
I'm talking about Brown, yes. Jackson.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, okay. Yes, sir.
I would ask the question, what's your opinion on the Supreme Court in Lovins versus Virginia? Should not the Virginia had a right, like the Constitution says, It would have been a good question because she's married to a white man. And I would like to see what she would have said.
That is interesting. See, now I take it a little differently. I think that interracial marriage is blatantly blocking an interracial marriage is blatantly unconstitutional because it violates the 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection of the laws. And marriage is a contract that is traditional, that is, you know, in law entered into by a man and a woman, you know, and I don't agree with the Supreme Court, you know, changing that to same sex marriage because same sex by definition is a marriage. It certainly is a union. And it certainly, as far as I'm concerned, is fine, but it doesn't come under the heading of marriage because it's not a marriage. A marriage is between a man and a woman.
Hold on. I know. I'm sorry. Where did that actually come from before America adopted that as a practical application of law?
Oh, I don't know. Every Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Muslim tradition, as far back as you can go, probably Buddhist tradition as well. Marriage is an ancient institution going back, you know, to the Old Testament.
That's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. So by tradition, by custom, by law, the marriage is between a man and a woman, and so for the idea of interracial doesn't even enter into it to me, at all. Make sense?
But on the case with the, I believe it was the Overfield case,
mm-hmm.
where Ginsburg and Kagan participated in the decision, the majority, they should have recused themselves because they had performed same-sex marriages earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of them had performed two, so they should have been off the court case.
Yeah. Well, the Supreme Court shouldn't have messed with that because they were creating law. They were creating something that didn't exist. See, marriage has existed for as long as we've had, you know, any kind of society. I'm going to bring Cindy this. She's a few minutes early, which is always good, into our discussion. Cindy, you can join us, you know, at any time. And I'm going to ask your opinion before we get to the Medical Freedom Report. But especially when we're talking about issues of abortion and marriage and things like that, I definitely want your opinion.
Can I be really annoying for like 30 seconds?
Okay, please, annoy me. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, Greg.
It's all right.
No, the Senate is the one who legislates. The Senate and the House of Representatives, they're the one who legislates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then they pass it over to the executive office, which is the president, and then
We know that.
They pass it over. I know. I'm
part?
Just trying to make sure that people understand. I was going to annoy you.
This audience? You don't have to worry about explaining basic physics.
I told you beforehand that I was going to annoy you. Okay, I'll shut up.
Okay, I'm getting background noise from one of you's got a speakerphone or something. I think it might have been Josh's line. All right, so this is the question. Marriage is not something that the Supreme Court should mess with, you know, if they want it, like I say, the difference is have a state blocking interracial marriage between a man and a woman, that is an equal protection issue of the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court creating this idea that same-sex marriage is marriage, if the states want to do that, I think they're wrong, but they can. But the Supreme Court can't do that. They can't create something out of nothing. So this is where I come down on those two issues. Cindy, let's get you into this for a couple of minutes before we get to medical freedom. What's your take on it, if you want to have a take on it?
Oh, my gosh. I'm coming in, I think, at a really bad time. But are we talking about not allowing interracial marriages?
Pianki, you want to explain it?
No. The lady, when she opened up, first day, she said that she was highly supported, basically, of the U.S. Constitution. Well, I would have asked the question of her, what was her opinion mm-hmm. on the Supreme Court authorizing interracial marriage? Should that have not been left to the state, as the Constitution says? Doesn't the states control marriage? And being the fact that she's married to a white male, I wonder what she would have said.
But what would even be the grounds for questioning interracial marriages if it's between a man and a woman?
Well, can I intervene there?
Because
yeah, go ahead.
It should be left up to the states, as the Constitution says.
No, it shouldn't be a federal law. It should be a state-by-state basis. Or people get to choose.
Oh, so all right,
I'm
so
just
getting,
saying.
I don't know how race is any part of a marriage. That
yeah.
that Why is that?
Yes, ma'am. I agree with that. Absolutely. But I'm saying that we kept taking everything away from the state powers, and that caused a civil war. And I'm not entirely sure that's not going to start another one. So I'm just saying.
Well, no, that's a good point. Let me ask Bianchi a question, because segregation was state law, and that was ended by the Supreme Court of the Civil Rights Act, by the federal government. The federal government ended segregation in the states. States were ending it on their own. You know, Democrat-controlled southern states were segregation states.
But,
and so,
okay,
hold on a second.
Greg, but they're
I'm going to ask Bianchi a question. So here's the point, though, that the 14th Amendment, you know, demands the equal protection of the laws. And segregation, obviously, is a violation of the equal protection of the laws, because you're segregating. And so in that respect, if you're, you know, if you're saying that the states had the right to do that because, it's, you know, segregation isn't something mentioned in the Constitution, are you saying that the Supreme Court could not have stepped in terms of segregation under the 14th Amendment? Bianchi.
Well, the 14th Amendment came about basically in whole because of the Dred Scott decision.
Mm-hmm.
When Justice Tennant said that a black man has no right that a white person is bound to respect, which basically at that time was true. See, the problem with today is that we take our knowledge about what we know on everything, and we want to walk back into those societal norms and say, hey, what you doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, it would work itself out at some point in time. But before the 14th Amendment, it was up to the states to decide what marriage was all about.
Yeah. No,
and I think
the states should
decide. At that point in time, it was cool.
Yeah, the states should decide, but at the point where they're discriminating, you know, and they're violating equal protection. And, of course, then people argue, well, don't gay people deserve equal protection? Well, this is where it gets messy, right? Because now you've got a situation where you've got, you know, marriage is being defined as a man and a woman, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. That's how I define it. That's how society's defined it since we've had societies, you know, as far back as you go, across cultures, across nations, across languages, everything. Okay, so there's a consistency to that. And there's a, you know, and so that makes sense to me. However, you know, like I say, it just gets messy, though, when you're saying you want the states to have the powers that aren't delegated to the federal government. On the other hand, you want the equal protection and the rights of the Constitution apply equally. But this idea of creating special rights, you know, and something that's not – see, marriage isn't a right. This is where it gets really messy. Marriage is not a right. Marriage is a contract between two people. So you're actually contract law. You're actually looking at interstate commerce kind of stuff, you know, in contracts and civil cases. So this is where it gets messy. Anyway, I'm going to hold it up right now.
Well,
we can talk about this with John.
Hold on.
Yeah, I want to get Cindy's report. Great. Bianchi, last comment, and then we can come back to this, you know, later in the show in about an hour or so with Jonathan. Bianchi?
Well, like I said, I would like to hear what was said. But, you know, look at the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, which came on the heels of the Dred Scott decision, said anyone born in the country
mm-hmm.
is a citizen of the state and citizen of the country. Citizen of the country, citizen of the state. Well,
mm-hmm.
that couldn't apply to slaves that was already born, because they was born before the 14th Amendment was put into effect. So they would have had to die out, all of them, and anyone born from that point on, it could apply to.
No, 14th Amendment applies to slaves. 14th Amendment applies because, you know, born or naturalized. And so slaves were naturalized citizens upon the end of the Civil War, as far as I know. So slaves who were nations who were, you know, nationals of other countries, slaves that weren't born in this country but were brought here, were naturalized citizens at the end of the Civil War, were made citizens. And I think, I don't know if the 14th or the 13th Amendment did that. I think the 13th actually did that. But we can take a look at that. Anyway,
it was the 14th.
Okay.
The 13th
the point is
Amendment
that,
stopped.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. No.
The point is
I guess
that slaves
I could talk
were
not, on this. I am black now. You have my right?
Now you tell me. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's get to
continue with the show, Greg. Right? I'm just messing with you, buddy. I just wanted to...
Informed consent, the ability to receive the truth for your medical care, and the ability to consent freely to any medical procedure, or not, based on the truthful information received, has completely disappeared in this era of medical, big government, big tech, big pharma, fascism. There are many warriors coming forward to try and keep your medical freedom. This is so you won't be forced to ever wear a mask. And you won't be forced through a government mandate to inject your body with a dangerous experimental gene therapy purposely and deceitfully called a vaccine. Medical freedom is when you aren't forced into anything that violates your individual rights. Join us now as one of those warriors of medical freedom talks about the latest victories and the struggles yet to be won. Join us now for the Medical Freedom Report with Cindy Cagle. You know, as much as I hate to interrupt a really spicy discussion, we actually do have somewhat of a schedule here occasionally on the show, but we do have time to get back to it. So we'll probably have some time, you know, after about half an hour, as long as Cindy wants to stick around here. We can cover some of the things we talked about earlier. And Jonathan, what we're trying to do, just to let you guys know, we're trying to get both Matt Gaetz to call in and Stuart Rhodes of the Oath Keepers to call in so they can talk to each other. That was my plan for this morning. So we'll see what happens. We don't know. I mean, I've alerted the Gaetz campaign folks, Matt Gaetz himself, you know, his email, and we'll see if we can coordinate that. And I think Stuart Rhodes is calling in about an hour. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I have no idea, but that's what's going on today. Cindy, what's going on in medical freedom? Let's throw it over to you here.
Wow. Well, I was just kind of glancing over North Carolina, and the idiocy continues there. It looks like the governor there vetoed a bill to end emergency powers, which just is, it defies logic. And I think somebody quoted in there, you know, an emergency is not something that lasts 2 years.
Who's the governor? Do you know the governor of North Carolina? Do you know anything about them?
Roy Cooper. He's a
Roy
Democrat.
Cooper. I'm not familiar. Of course,
no,
he's a Democrat.
Not either, but that's just asinine.
Yeah. Did he have a statement that, said his logic for maintaining the emergency powers other than this is really cool and I get to do neat stuff to control people? I mean, did he have a
pretty
statement?
Pretty much that's what he said.
Oh, what a moron. When's he up for re-election?
Yeah. He said, I don't. But he basically said we're coming out of a pandemic, and you know, we've been able to preserve our economy and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I there's no excuse to extend emergency powers, and that's actually happening or just happened in Florida as well with the liability stuff. Why are we continuing stuff that originated out of an emergency? And, you know, I hope we can all agree that there was an emergency at one point, or at least an unknown situation that you took precautions for.
Unknown, yes. Emergency, no. We were never in an emergency situation. We weren't. We had the cure. I broadcast the cure March 2nd of 2020. We broadcast the cure and the treatment for COVID, you know, 2 weeks before the 15 days to slow the spread. So, no, there was this is my used car voice. Actually, I saw Mark Davis. You ever hear Mark Davis on the Texas station he's on? He talks like that, too. Yeah, he gets that sincere voice, and it's all over. But no, there was never an emergency. There never was. We need
okay,
care,
so we can't agree on that, but we can certainly agree that 2 years later, we are nowhere near an emergency. So why are we extending liability protections that were enacted to hospitals and whatnot under an emergency situation?
Let me ask you this. Here's the tougher question. Why would you ever suspend liability regardless of an emergency? It's like, why would
that's
you get rid
question.
Of freedom? Why would you get rid of freedom in an emergency? Freedom is what saves you. The free access to information, the freedom to conduct your business. You know, if you're sick, you know, take care of yourself. You know, and if the state wants to quarantine people who are demonstrated proven sick, that's a different thing. But you don't quarantine the healthy people. You don't lock down the economy. You don't close the schools, especially with kids who are the least susceptible to COVID of all. And the fact that they're trying to snake oil jab children is that's medical Holocaust territory as far as I'm concerned. But let me ask you, let's get this question again. Why would you limit, what is it about an emergency that you'd make conditions easier for people to abuse other people? Hospitals to abuse their patients. Why would you limit their liability? I would increase it. Actually, what
and
do
you
think?
I'm not, and I know this is not going to make me any friends. I'm not.
Don't worry about it.
I'm not as offended by the fact that they did declare an emergency, and that I this isn't going to sound right, but that they limited our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
But I was willing to accept it for that small amount of time.
I wasn't.
and I get that, and I know, yeah, that's yeah. probably not a very popular thought process. But that's how I felt. You know, I was
okay.
willing to do a little bit that I normally wouldn't do
mm-hmm.
to flatten the curve.
But did you question it at all? Did you question the idea of reducing liability, of making it easier for people to abuse other people in the hospitals, to make treatments faster? I would think that in an emergency, you want to be extra careful. You know, before the snake oil jabs came out, if you're going to bring something out in a year that normally takes 10 to 15 years, you'd have to be even more careful. You'd have to have full liability because you don't want to bring out things that are going to do people harm. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. So what is it about an emergency that causes people to think that giving up your rights is somehow a good thing, that giving up your liability, the normal protections in a normal situation, you know, somehow giving those up in an emergency, you know, is somehow better? Because to me, it seems to be proven that it's actually worse.
And you make a good argument, but for me, and
mm-hmm.
I'm just speaking for me, it was fear. Fear of the
okay.
unknown, and that inner naivety that wanted to believe the government had my best interest at heart.
Oh, see, I got over that a long time ago. I honestly wanted to
believe, or did believe. You know, I never imagined, and there again, I feel kind of stupid at this point, but I never believed that the government would not have our best interest at heart.
Yeah. Let me ask Josh, and then let me ask Pianki the same question. Josh, let me start with you. And did you believe the government had your best interest at heart, and do you think it was okay to limit liability in an emergency?
Well, the first thing I bought when the pandemic happened was a no step on snake balaclava. It was bright yellow, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
What are you talking about, Josh?
The Gadsden flag.
Okay, get to my question. I mean, this is what drives me crazy about you sometimes. So I want you to get to the questions. I want to keep you focused.
Okay, I'm right with you. Go on.
Okay, fine. Pianki, was it a good thing to limit liability in an emergency, and did you have any faith that the government had your best interest at heart?
Well, the answer to that is, for me, is no. And
okay.
more importantly, the Constitution should never be turned off.
Mm-hmm.
Never should it be turned off, no matter what the
Wait a minute, Josh.
Right. Never should it be turned off, no matter what the occasion, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's war, whether it's inclement weather. Never should the Constitution be turned off for the simple reason. Then if it is, all bets are off. I can go out and kill. I can go out and rob and steal. What law do I have to be accounted to?
And that's exactly what happened, is that we had the anarchy of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, you know, doing just that. They were killing people. They were causing riots. They were shutting down highways. You know, ambulances couldn't get through. Fire engines, police couldn't get through. It was a horrible situation. And that's that is what happens. Sudhi, you may have missed some of our earlier discussions, but Pianki's been with the show pretty much since the beginning. And his best line is that the Constitution doesn't have an on and off switch. It's always in force. And I've talked about this too, the Constitution in the preamble. You know, we do ordain and establish this Constitution. Well, once it was ordained and established, there is no suspension clause. There is no reasonable restriction clause. There is no provision for emergencies to turn it off clause. It's always enforced. And as I said, and apparently Jim Jordan said this too, because I heard him, you know, several months later, that the time you need the Constitution the most is when the government wants to take your rights away. And the time they want to take your rights away the most is during a real or imagined emergency crisis or pandemic or war or things like that. You look at the Ukraine war. First casualty of that Ukraine war is truth. So that's the time you want the free expression of the press. You want the media to be open. You want – and take a look. And I've talked about this. In fact, this is one of our big discussions with our Australian Bill of Rights that we're working on. And one of the examples I use is that COVID – you know, when they took all the rights of Australians away, They made the situation so bad. These people were housebound. They literally had helicopters with thermal imagers flying over houses to see if a house had too many people that they might actually have other folks meeting there. And they
Are
were arrested.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding. That's why I'm working so hard on this Australian Bill of Rights. And it's going to be amazing when it comes out. But this is the kind of thing that goes on. So given that COVID, you know, we lost all the information on early treatments, Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Mikovits, you know, Dr. Diderel in France, and all these other doctors around the country, our local folks here, Ben Marble and Jim Thorpe, all these folks that we're talking about, early treatments, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know what they are, vitamin D3, C and zinc. We know what these things are. We know they work. That information was denied. That denial of information, you know, under the increasing powers of government in a constitutional violation, killed almost 1 million people.
Well, and I think maybe because I wasn't aware of that information, maybe that's why I was a little more willing to say, okay, let the government make the decisions and we'll get through this. So, yeah, maybe because of that, there are more people like me that were willing to say, okay, they're going to step in and you know, tell us that we can and can't do things. And that's because we didn't have all of the information. Because I, in all honesty, did not know that there were effective early treatments until well into the pandemic.
You missed my video on it then. Video March 12th, 3 days before, 15 days to slow the spread. I said, this is wrong. I said, there is no pandemic. You know, we've got the cures. We've got the information. This is nothing but a violation of rights. Okay, so given what you know now, do you still think that, or how has your opinion changed in terms of rights, in terms of freedoms? I mean, obviously I'm biased. So, you know, I mean, don't be afraid to disagree with me because it's perfectly fine. And I do believe you represent millions of people. Or how have your views changed since COVID to think that, maybe we should have our rights in an emergency. Maybe we should keep our liability. You know, maybe we should keep the laws to protect us because they're designed to protect us. Maybe we should keep the constitutional rights to protect us because in an emergency, that's when they really are needed the most. How have your views changed on that?
Well, they certainly have, but that's, you know, that's Monday morning quarterback, I think. Mm-hmm. Would I, if I was presented with another situation, certainly I would be a lot more skeptical because this situation has shattered my faith in, you know, the majority of our government to do what is in the best interest of the people. So that in itself has changed who I am fundamentally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, would I buck the decisions? You know, I want to say yes, but I honestly don't know.
Okay, well,
but
let's make it,
I do know.
Go ahead.
I certainly would not. I would not go along without question at this point. Because
well, that's a good change. Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. There's a new variant. I call it the Democon variant, the Democrat con variant that's going to be coming up before the election. All right. So given that the Democon variant is about to be released by Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, avaricious, what else was my full terms for him? Genocidal, I think I already said that. Anyway, compulsively lying vaccine drug pusher. He's already talking about, well, we might have to mask again, even though we know masks don't work. We might have to lock down again, even though we know lockdowns don't work. Okay. So given the new variant coming out, now what? now how do you view this whole thing? Given the context of the Constitution and rights.
Yeah, I mean, he has no credibility. So anything that he says just invokes defiance in me at this point. It really does. I don't know how this man is allowed to speak anymore on this.
I'll tell you why. He's a Democrat. He's a Democrat. He's supported by Brandon. He loves Hillary. He's a Hillary stooge. That's how he's able to do it.
But enough is enough. You know, he needs to. I saw something where he indicated he might be retiring. The man should be in jail.
Yes, exactly. Don't believe he's retiring. Are you kidding? He's making too much money. He socked away $10 million illegally and refused to declare it. Senator Marshall of Kansas had to find it. This guy is every bit as bad as Dr. Mengele. I mean, he is the worst of the worst. He's conducting, you know, a genocidal drug experiment on this country and other countries because there are Dr. Fascists in every country, from what I've heard from Patrick Wood, who does the magazine Technocracy. I want to get Josh and Pianki. I want to ask the same question of you guys. Josh, I want you to focus, just because I want you to focus. Don't be gads and fly. But how have your views changed from what you thought when the pandemic, you know, the plandemic began 2 years ago to where you stand now on constitutional rights? Did you go through an evolutionary process like Cindy, or were you always in favor of the constitutional rights? Like Pianki and me.
I will never deviate from constitutional rights. I don't know. When you're talking about other people interacting with the situation, you're talking about situational stuff, and that's based on location. So I don't really know how I can actually interact with somebody else. But I'm from Illinois. I'm not going to play that game. I'm not
Which
from
game?
Chicago.
I'm not picking on you for where you are.
I'm actually picking on you.
Okay.
No.
This is what I wanted to get
no,
you to focus.
I,
okay. So you got to focus, dude. If you're going to be on the show, you got to focus. Pianki.
I know.
Your views.
I'm focused.
Hold on. Okay. Good. Pianki, I know your views never changed, but how, you know, were you always as constitutionally strong as you are now? Especially during pandemics, wars, and everything else like that, or was it an evolutionary process for you too?
No, I always have been. I've never seen no pandemic like this before. And
okay.
I was surprised that U.S. citizens don't know how all this works. And I always had complained about government schools, as we started using the term. I used to say public schools, but government schools.
Mm-hmm.
So you got an ignorant populace that was led to the slaughterhouse.
You know, I think those of us that were around, and I was a teenager at the time for the Vietnam War, I think that was probably the biggest wake-up call for a lot of us, and then followed by Watergate. And I remember I got to this country during the Watergate hearings. And so here I am, you know, it's 1972, Watergate hearings are going on. And then there's this war in this place called Vietnam, which I didn't even know where it was. I had to look it up. And here I am sitting in a country at war, you know, nobody's being bombed. Nobody's being shot. Nobody's being attacked. I said, what the hell is going on here? We're fighting for freedom. I said, where? Vietnam. What does that have to do with freedom? You know, so even coming to this country, I was incredibly skeptical. And I knew this country was probably going to be next for a communist takeover simply because the government was so big. And I talked about this, you know, my teenage years, and nobody believed me. They looked at me like I'm some kind of alien with three heads. I said, this government is big. I've been in Canada. I've been in Australia. When I got to the United States, the first thing I noticed is how big the government was. And that was my first clue that something was really wrong here, that this myth that this is the freest country on earth, that America is the greatest country on earth, which it is the greatest country on earth, but it's got some major problems. It's not the freest country. Anyway, let me put it this way. It's not as free as it could be. If we actually followed our Constitution, followed the laws and things that we talk about in our founding, we would be the freest country on earth, but we're not. And I noticed that right away.
That's what I say about the state of Florida.
Go for it. Yeah, tell me.
Well, that we're, you know, Florida is seen by the rest of the country as the freest state in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you know, we're still being denied medical services. We've still got these segregation policies with employers about the vaccinated and unvaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, you know, we are ahead in a lot of areas, and I don't deny that, and I don't take that away from the governor. But we're not, you know, this beacon of freedom. As long as, you know, my daughter is being denied medical services because she's not wearing a dang mask that doesn't work, that our own governor and Surgeon General say don't work, you know, we're not free.
What's the state of the mandates right now? As far as I know, it's illegal to have a mask mandate in school. I thought for businesses, but I guess not. They can still do that?
Yeah.
Under what provision?
I believe it's the Emergency Act.
But I thought that was already gone. Didn't DeSantis stop that emergency? Or is he still signing emergency?
Isn't it federal, though? That's my understanding. It's because of the federal mandate.
Oh, that's why they're able to do it in the businesses? Okay, yeah, Brandon is going to keep authorizing the emergency as long as he's illegally in the White House. So
yeah.
that's going to be a given because they love the power. They want to push, you know, they're all in the vaccine business. They're all making
but
money off
this. But
if
the state trumps the federal law, mm-hmm. why are we allowing that?
That's a good question. The problem is enforcement, and the problem is insisting. You know, we know by the Constitution that anything not specifically delegated to the federal government, and health is one of those things not delegated, the federal government has no role in health at all by the Constitution, none. The closest they would get is interstate commerce, and then they use interstate commerce to regulate everything. But as far as the health, public health, that's a state thing. The only thing the CDC has power over is control at the borders to not let in people who are obviously carrying a contagious disease. That's where their power is.
So,
but that's it.
Here,
everything else, the guidelines, the guidelines are suggestions. You know, it's just like, oh, I got an idea for you. You know, and everybody's taking those as mandates, and they're simply not. But it has to be enforced. It's like Roe v. Wade, for example, like we were talking about earlier. Roe v. Wade is an illegal decision of the Supreme Court. It's moot. It has no power. The Supreme Court made up a policy and tried to impose it on the nation. The fact that millions of people are going along with it is insane to me. But that's what's happening. So unless people understand that Roe v. Wade is an illegal decision, they're going to keep following it, even though there's no reason to. In the same way here, these mandates, people think that because the CDC says something as a suggestion that all of a sudden it's a mandate, and it's not.
Yeah.
That's where we're stuck. So what my question for you is the difference between what we think Florida's doing and what Florida's actually doing. We think Florida has gotten rid of mandates for masks and vaccine snake oil jabs. We think Florida has completely opened up the schools. We think there are no closures of business. That's what we think.
We also think that doctors have the ability to speak openly against you know, the CDC and NIH's protocols. We also mm-hmm. think that doctors have the ability to talk about alternative medications without repercussions, and they don't. The fact of the matter is they don't. We just passed House Bill 7021 extending mm-hmm. Liability protection. Which I know was presented in a way that offers protection to doctors that are giving alternative treatments. It's offering them protection, but that's about 10% of the population or 10% of the healthcare professionals in our state. The mm-hmm. rest is the hospital protocol. So a solution that offers protection to 80% of the practicing healthcare system is based on an emergency that is long gone, and if we didn't have it, would allow people that are being treated in a way that results in problems, it would give them a legal system to sue. So why do we need, you know, this extension of something that was, again, derived out of an emergency? Why are we extending that for another year when it is only giving protection to a very small amount of doctors in the community that are actually treating alternatively? We know that. And
when you say alternative, are you talking hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, things like that we know
yes,
work?
Yes, things that go against the CDC and NIH protocol.
Which is interesting because those things don't work. In fact, I was looking up, I'm going to do a show probably Monday, on my suspicion that that Dr. Fascist killed Freddie Mercury of Queen by denying proper treatment for AIDS and giving him AZT. So they've got a long history of doing this. You know, in the same way, they forced the remdesivir ventilator death march, as I call it. You know, in that it wasn't the COVID, you know, put people in the hospital, but remdesivir and ventilators killed them because remdesivir
under
caused
the guise,
go ahead.
Under the guise of, we're gonna offer protection to those doctors that are doing alternative treatments. We're gonna extend this liability protection when really all it's doing is protecting the deadly remdesivir protocol. Because the majority of physicians pushing healthcare the COVID healthcare are pushing the CDC and NIH protocol. It's not that 10% or 20% of physicians offering alternative treatment. So
how do they do
that?
How do they do that when they see all these people dying? What is your frigging problem?
I don't know. And it was blunt. It was every single Republican in our Florida state government. So explain that. Well, every single Republican except Sabatini, he was absent. And then we turned around and, well, we, I shouldn't say we, our representatives turned around and tabled the ability to offer them free speech and protect them for speaking out and talking about effective alternative treatments. So Florida is in a better place than a lot of other states, but we are not this beacon of constitutional freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's driving me nuts.
No, I think the freest place when it comes to COVID is South Dakota. Kristi Noem did an incredible job. She never locked down. DeSantis did. He closed the schools. He closed the parks. He wanted to keep the boats 6 feet apart. I mean, he did everything any other governor did, but he changed quickly. I mean, he saw the light real fast.
And if you ask the overwhelming majority of people in this country who they think the freest state is in regards to COVID, do you think they'd say South Dakota?
Well, if they listen to this show, they would, but they would know. But, yeah, no, most people would say Florida because Florida gets
exactly.
the
news. Exactly,
and that's because they want DeSantis in the White House, so that's why.
And he's out front doing a lot of, press conferences and saying a lot of things that sound good, but – you don't see that with Kristi Noem.
She made a brilliant speech at CPAC. If you get a chance to watch her speech at CPAC, it was incredible.
That was Kristi months ago. Do you know how many times we've seen Governor DeSantis since then?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. In fact, I'd love to get Kristi Noem on the show. DeSantis most recently, and this is a totally different subject, actually just issued a proclamation against Will Thomas, the man, who's
God bless Governor DeSantis.
Yeah,
now,
he declared the woman the winner. Yeah.
I had a revelation the other day, and, I'm not 100% in, but, looking at the picture of that man posing as a woman, I kept saying to myself, why are we going to such great lengths to ignore the obvious, that is a man pretending to be a woman? Why are so many people, what's wrong with me that I'm not seeing it, that I'm not being more,
inclusive?
The word, compassionate or delusional, I guess?
Well, no, I think... Tucker Carlson explained it very well last night when he said, obviously it's absurd. He's obviously a man. He may be taking testosterone blockers, but that Adam's apple is sticking right out at you. When you hear him interviewed, he says, yeah, I had a great time at the swim event last night. I'm trying to concentrate on my swimming. He sounds like a dude. Okay.
He sounds like a dude. He is
like,
chromosomally
a dude.
But
right?
we have an overwhelming population that is pushing a narrative to ignore that, to deny it.
No.
And I can't wrap my head around why. And I internally to say, what's wrong with me that I'm not willing to embrace that same thought process? And
The point of this is not to have a man swimming in a woman's event. The point is to make you believe something that's patently absurd so they can control your mind. This is what Tucker Carlson was explaining last night. He's absolutely right. This is the 2+2=5 theory, okay? If they can get you to believe that 2+2=5 and say it, then it can make you do anything. This is about reconditioning your brain to force you to accept something that is patently false. Obviously, this is a dude. He sounds like a dude. He looks like a dude. He swims like a dude. He's a dude.
But in the process of doing that, under the guise of we're trying to be more inclusive, more accepting, non-judgmental, they are pounding people like me that won't get on board with that, which defies their their whole narrative for being this kinder, gentler, more accepting society. And
there's nothing kinder or gentle about the leftists, and they're the most judgmental people of all.
But that is the narrative they push doing
I
it,
don't care.
Is that
yeah, I know.
You're not being inclusive, you're not being acceptive, you're not being non-judgmental.
Well, they're not being rational. They're not being rational. They're not being logical. They're not being obviously, you know, this guy's a dude. So the idea of trying to push him into women's sports is insane. It's irrational. Nobody
in
their right mind would do it.
In my effort to understand why they're doing it or, self-reflect on what I might do differently,
uh-huh.
You know, I'm constantly, you know, asking those questions of myself. And somebody
yeah.
said something the other day that just kind of, a light bulb went off.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, my husband gets very frustrated with me because I have a hard time accepting some of the conspiracy theories. We are on very
you
different.
You have to know our husband. We rode together to the to Matt Gaetz again, and they're actually a fabulous couple. You guys compliment each other so well, it's great. But you're different. You're definitely different.
Yes,
and
we are on very different planes.
He doesn't see conspiracy theories. He just sees conspiracies. It's great. You got to give him a show sometime. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
And the other day when I was having this conversation with myself about what's wrong with me or why can I not embrace this, somebody said that it was an effort to stop increasing the population.
What?
And
No. That's crazy. No.
And I'm the first one to say things sound crazy, but
mm-hmm.
in this world where we've got Social Security that, is probably not going to exist by the time I would collect it, and we are moving in a direction of a population that seems to be problematic to some people.
Oh, they're stupid.
Is that a,
we've dumbed
is
down
that
because
a
so
reason?
Much. We're a nation of
to
morons.
Put,
yeah.
to push, a relationship between people that can't produce, can't continue on.
Well... Let me ask you, I got two nasty questions for you. The first, and then I'll get Pianca in the conversation too. The first question is, when you say you're trying to understand, I've noticed this, and I'm going to be real sexist here, women, much more, my women friends are much more on the side of, I want to understand, I want to be compassionate, and guys are like, this is insane. We're not going to believe this crap. The guys,
well, there's a lot of guys that do believe it.
Well, they're metrosexual idiots. I can't account for them. That's their problem. But you look at, when I asked Pianchi the question, has he always been, strong in the Constitution that there is no on-off switch? He's like, yes. So that was never a question for him. For me, it was interesting because I came here from an extremely leftist family. So I had to go through the process of going from leftist to conservative, from
wow.
conservative to constitutional independent. So I came from a place, I had a radical mother who marched for abortion rights, before the Supreme Court decision. That's my
really?
Orientation.
Really?
Okay? Oh, yeah. So I came from this incredibly liberal, and I was, I've been in the Green Party, a Democrat,
wow.
Back in my impetuous, misguided youth. And then I got to Washington and did an internship when I was 20 years old, and I saw how things actually worked. And I was working with a consumer group, Consumer Federation of America, which is actually a really nice group. I mean, the boss was a decent guy. And although I grew to disagree with him more and more on his issues, a man's name was Stephen Brobeck, prince of a man. Completely different view by the time I left Washington. But he was really good, and he was really helpful to me. And so, he'd be like what I call is a really decent person who was just happened to be liberal, whom I disagree with as time went on when I saw how Washington worked. But that's where I started from. I went to a liberal University of Massachusetts.
Wow.
I went to a liberal high school, Lexington High School, Lexington, Massachusetts, that was where the battle that started this country began. But that was a different time. Now they believe in gun control. And so I completely changed from, coming from a socialist, ultra-feminist, Marxist,
wow.
Family to where I am now. So obviously, I didn't carry on the family tradition, much to the chagrin and regret.
Are your parents still alive?
No, they both passed on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're missing all the fun I'm doing now, which is too bad. But
they're turning over in their grave.
Oh, well, my father was a little less political. My mother wouldn't be talking to me right now. So even if she were still here, she would not be talking to me. She'd be so disgusted. And that's just the way it goes. And that's okay, fine. You know, we disagree, but. But anyway, but the thing is women I find much more willing to accept things and try and rationalize. And the first thing you said, what's wrong with me? Women are more interested in looking at what's wrong with them than what's wrong with the situation. Guys will say, what's wrong with the situation? So let me put this obviously sexist comment on to you, and then I get Pianki's take on it. What do you think?
No, I think, and there again, that's a difference between men and women. We are different, mm-hmm. and those differences are needed and should be celebrated.
Well, I'm not questioning that. They're absolutely needed and celebrated, but it's a tendency I see that women tend to look that they are the ones who are wrong first, rather than saying, I think a guy is much more likely to say the other side is wrong and then look at themselves. Women want to look at themselves first and then say that the other thing is wrong.
Well, I think that goes along with a lot of women make decisions out of emotions and and men are much more, I hate to say rational, I'll probably get some hate mail for that, but we do tend to make decisions based on emotions, and men have an ability to remove that.
I think they're different emotions. I disagree slightly. Like I say, Pianki, jump in any time here. But I think men make decisions based on emotions too, but I think we're using different emotions. I think we have a stronger sense of self-preservation and a stronger sense of self-righteousness. We believe we are right first before we'll accept that we're wrong. Whereas women, I think, are likely to believe that they're wrong first before they accept that they're right. Pianki, get in this. What do you think?
I don't see either one making good decisions nowadays. I'm sorry.
This is why Pianki's on the show, okay? Go ahead. Feel free to expand your thoughts, sir.
Well, I don't. I don't see either one making good decisions, especially the events that we have witnessed in the last 3 years or so since the advent of Donald Trump. So you don't.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. Look at the things that people agreed to. What about the gentleman that was out in California making the survey? Do he think that asking people, do they think that a non-vaxxer should be in prison? And many of them said yes.
Oh
yeah, that's is that Louder with Crowder or is that the other guy? There's two out there. And there's a guy.
This is now, today, they're still saying nonsense like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So for our new listeners in Haiti, we just added Haiti to our international family. And for the Kenyan listeners, you know, Obama's birthplace, at least as far as you guys are concerned, our Kenyan listeners are back. this is the ultimate free speech zone, city. Just get used to it. we talk about it later.
Okay.
I forgot my point. I was having so much fun making that.
You got those who think that you just want to do away with college entrance exam, SAT, ACT.
Yeah.
You got a group out there in California, a governor of some woman says that high school students don't have to prove they can do math and read
math is
in order to graduate. Then you got another one that said multiplication is racist toward blacks. So you
oh,
got
my
to,
word.
Oh, it's irrational. That's irrational, yeah. No, but there's a guy in California, which is where I started this silly conversation. There's a guy in California who does he's a conservative, and he does these impossible surveys, and people go along with it. And with a perfectly straight face, he's really good at this, too. He'll say, he'll have a petition that says, you know, we really need to, would you sign our petition to abolish the Bill of Rights? The Bill of Rights is outdated. It's obsolete. It really supports white men. And we really, you know, we'll have a much more equitable country, and we'll have more racial justice if we just abolish the Bill of Rights. And he'll say with a perfectly straight face, right? And people sign it. Oh, yeah, you're right, man. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Power of the people, baby. You know, and but you get kids, you get older folks, you get all kinds of people. Oh, it's hysterical. Or then you get the surfers. Well, I totally, dude. Yeah. You know, without the Bill of Rights, I could, like, do what I want, and it would be okay. I could surf. I could get pizza. I could be, like, total Californian. You know, and these things happen. These people come up, and they'll sign this stuff. Or you'll get, you know, folks from out of the country.
Yes, I came for freedom, yeah, and I don't think it's exactly as that worked out. So we'll get rid of the Bill of Rights. Things will be good. We'll have order. You know,
they sign up for this stuff. Don't mind me. I'm just doing accents.
Well, I bring a Yoda in the conversation. Force is strong with him.
Sorry.
Well, I do think there, because of our education system, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people in society that agree with that, that think we should just do away with the foundation of our country and mm-hmm. become just like some of these other unfree
socialist democracies.
Yeah.
And that is the definition of a republic as opposed to a democracy. In a democracy, those morons could vote away your rights. In a republic, they cannot. Because the whole meaning of, and this is what we're talking about with Australia too, this is a big topic of conversation. Difference between they say democracy or they say human rights, I go crazy. Because a republic is about maintaining the rights, even if only one person or even nobody exercised those rights. Those are still your individual rights. Those are your God-given rights. And the whole purpose of a republic is to protect the rights of the individuals despite a tyrannical majority that would happily take away your rights, take away your property, take away everything else. You know, a lynch mob is a democracy. Majority rule. He's guilty. String him up. Okay? That's a democracy. All right? In the purest form, a lynch mob is a democracy in action, whereas a republic in action is arrest, trial, rules of evidence, the right to an attorney, the right to remain silent, you know, the right not to testify against yourself. These are rights that are the formation of a republic. So when we talk about people voting away rights, and when they talk about, you know, voting in emergency powers and things like that, that's a democracy in action. Okay, unfortunately, we're not one, but most people don't realize that. So because everybody hears, you know, we've got to maintain we're freedom and democracy. Well, you can't say freedom and democracy in the same sentence. They're incompatible with each other. Democracy is not about freedom. It never has been. It's about rule by one over half. It's about bare majority rule. And if the bare majority, if 51% of one of our biggest problems right now is that 51% of the population can vote away 49% of the population's money. Okay, so guess which half is going to do that? The half that's not paying income tax, the half that's not working, the half that's sitting, you know, around like bums getting stimulus money still, if they're still getting it. That's the half that would happily vote away the 49% of the wealthier folks that are producing, that are investing in business, that are creating things, that used to drill for oil, you know, all that kind of stuff. They would, and this is when society dies. This is when it becomes a democracy. 51% of the people vote away 49%'s wealth, and then that 51% does nothing with it, you know, sits around their butt the whole time, and then society becomes Venezuela. That's why democracies are so evil, and most people don't know that. And unless you know that, you know, you're going to be like these idiots and morons that say, yeah, let's get rid of the Bill of Rights. Yeah, let's have concentration camps for the unvaxxed. Really, you know, there are, you know, parasites on society. They're killing grandma. You know, they're not sharing. They're not being equitable. They're not, you know, doing their part to society. They're not acting in the public interest. All these expressions I hate, which is why I'm mentioning them.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Yeah. But okay. Sometimes I question that we're not ruling as a democracy.
Well, good. I don't want to rule as a democracy.
No, but it seems like some of the things that are happening are made out of a democratic process.
Well, no. I mean, when you say democratic process, well, I'll give Pianki this here, and then I'll get an idea. Pianki, what's your take so far?
That's why come I said, and also Republican Senator of Indiana, Mike Braun, said the Supreme Court was wrong to legalize interracial marriage. Let me give you another reason why.
Okay.
In the 1800s, you had about 30-some-odd states that had the consent at 10 years of age. Delaware had it at 7, then 12. So could you imagine a black male in the 1800s, 18 years old, 19, 20-year-old, marrying a white girl that is 10 years old?
What?
See, we can't look, you can't go back in the history with your perspective of things today. It just don't work right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why come it was illegal for the Supreme Court to legalize interracial marriage. It should have been left up to the states.
Yeah, I think I just disagree with you on this because, like I see marriage as as much as marriage is a contract, it's not a right. But it's still, I don't see the connection of race and marriage today. You know, and so that to me would come under. Well, I understand why it used to happen.
Back in,
yeah,
but yeah, would but you societal want, norms in the 1800s, in the late 1700s, was not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
A black male, 18, 19, 20 years old, was not going to marry, even though it was legal for her to do so, a white female that was 10, 12, and surely in Delaware, where it was 7. It wouldn't happen.
Oh my goodness.
That's, well, yeah, you look at some of the old laws. I mean, gun control was about keeping free black slaves from owning firearms. You know, that's well established. But what if it was the other way around? What if a white guy wanted to marry a 10-year-old black girl under that same law?
That wasn't going to happen either. Black folks was not going to allow
it. Yeah. Okay. So in other words, so just because something's legal doesn't mean it's moral, and it doesn't mean it's necessarily enforceable, and it doesn't mean that people have to go along with it. You know, there's a lot of things that are technically legal that we don't want to make illegal, but we don't have to condone them either. All right. So in other words,
you
might be in our...
you should hear the conversation going among blacks. It's privilege to be there to listen to them against this nominee because she's married to a white male.
See, that doesn't come out. I wish they'd show her pictures of it. See, they haven't shown any pictures of her husband. I find that fascinating, too.
Her husband's name is Patrick something. I can't think of Patrick Jackson.
Well, he's an Irish lad. I can say lad. I can't say boy.
Well,
I'll call him a lad. He's a white guy.
Well, you know, here's a. I don't want to take you off the conversation, off the show.
That's okay.
We can talk about that too sometime, about the Irish.
We should. Well, I'll tell you what I want to do. Just because Jonathan's coming at 7:30 here, 8:30 Eastern, and we might have. I mean, it's a really remote chance. We might have. Both Stuart Rhodes and Congressman Matt Gaetz on the line at the same time. And certainly, if we get Stuart Rhodes only, I'm going to send that conversation to Matt Gaetz. I want to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. It's a little bit long. It'll take us right up to the bottom of the hour, but I want to get this started now. And then, of course, then we have the whole rest of the show to continue this. So, Cindy, if you have to go, why don't you give your contact information just in case you have to go. So
okay, and I also wanted to plug that there's going to be another convoy. It's actually going to be a state convoy. There's 12 or 15 points of interest to stay overnight and rally in different places throughout Florida and then end up in Tallahassee. And then from Tallahassee back to D.C., it's the Florida United Convoy. And it's going to start around the 7th in Miami of April. And it'll be in our area if we can get the support on the 18th, and they'll stay here overnight. But we need, you know, it's to end the emergency powers. We need people to stand up. We need peaceful noncompliance in numbers that they can't ignore. So, you know, I was a little disappointed. I was hoping that the original convoy that we attended was going to create the momentum throughout the nation to stop this nonsense, and it doesn't seem like it has, but the efforts are ongoing. So if you're, you know, food trucks or entertainment, it sounds like we have a venue for it, but we just need the support stuff to make that happen in our area. We need the support. You can reach out to me, Citizens for Medical Freedom. It's Citizens, the number 4, Medical Freedom. You can email me at c4mf@protonmail.com, and we'll get you connected to the people that are kind of laying out the groundwork.
I want to make sure you get your contact information. I have to start this piece, otherwise we won't get it in.
Okay.
All right. And Citizens for Medical Freedom, where do we find them?
Yes. You can find us on Facebook, Telegram, Gab, and then our website, www.citizens4medicalfreedom.com.
Okay. So if you have to go, we've got you covered, but if you can stick around, that would be even better. So let's get this started,
awesome.
And we'll be back with Jonathan.
Thanks.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers, here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Number 10, published on November 22nd, 1787 is a continuation by James Madison of his dire warnings against domestic faction and insurrection. Interesting choice of words. That he began in Federalist Number 9. He engages in the same made-up predictions designed to generate fear for the purpose of ratifying the Constitution over updating the Articles of Confederation. Most of Federalist Number 10 is a total waste of time. It's recycled nonsense from previous papers, and it's boring. However, way down about halfway, it gets very interesting, and that is in the discussion of a democracy versus a republic. Madison says, "From this view of the subject, it may be concluded that a pure democracy, by which I mean a society consisting of a small number of citizens who assemble and administer the government in person, can admit of no cure for the mischiefs of faction. A common passion or interest will, in almost every case, be felt by a majority of the whole. A communication and concert result from the form of government itself, and there is nothing to check the inducements to sacrifice the weaker party or an obnoxious individual. Hence, it is that such democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Theoretic politicians who have patronized this species of government have erroneously supposed that by reducing mankind to a perfect equality in their political rights, they would at the same time be perfectly equalized and assimilated in their possessions, their opinions, and their passions." In other words, according to James Madison, democracies don't work. And he's absolutely right. You can't have perfect equality with equality of everything, everybody, every expectation, and every outcome. The only perfectly equal society is where everybody has equally had all their property and rights removed by a totalitarian government. So much for democracy. That's why the Constitution in Article 4, Section 4 declares that we are guaranteed a republican form of government. So let's see what Madison says about that. He says, "The two great points of difference between a democracy and a republic are, first, the delegation of the government in the latter to a small number of citizens elected by the rest. Secondly, the greater number of citizens and greater sphere of country over which the latter may be extended. The effect of the first difference is, on the one hand, to refine and enlarge the public views by passing them through the medium of a chosen body of citizens whose wisdom may best discern the true interests of their country and whose patriotism and love of justice will least likely to sacrifice it to temporary or partial considerations. The other point of difference is, the greater number of citizens and extent of territory which may be brought within the compass of republican than of democratic government, and it is this circumstance principally which renders factious combinations less to be dreaded in the former than in the latter." Okay, well, that's all well and good. We are a republic, not a democracy. But how does this specifically relate to having a union under the new Constitution versus having a confederation under the old Articles? Madison doesn't say. Instead, he makes a rather large leap in talking about a large republic, which the United States would be given the expansion plans in the works. He wants you to assume that a large republic is better managed by the new Constitution over his predicted claims that under the Articles of Confederation, the Union will split into factions. That is really the heart of the hidden argument throughout this paper. He says, "Hence, it clearly appears that the same advantage which a republic has over a democracy in controlling the effects of faction is enjoyed by a large over a small republic, is enjoyed by the Union over the states composing it." By the Union over the states composing it? So much for federalism. This is a statement of a national government system supreme over the states, which was, I fear, the whole idea of the Constitution all along. Also, Madison offers no evidence or argument that a large republic is better than a small one. One would assume that if republics are the best form of government, they'd be good regardless of size. Also, missing is any evidence that the Constitution would prevent factions any better than the Articles of Confederation. I wonder how Madison would have explained the factions that created the Civil War under his very Constitution. Madison asks many rhetorical questions throughout this paper, which are designed to lead you to the appropriate rhetorical answers. However, the connection of questions to the probability of those actual events occurring in the answers is why I challenge his entire line of questioning. In his last argument for the Union under the Constitution, Madison actually argues the inferiority of states to control their factions over the national government, who would never let such factions spread to the other states. He says, "The influence of the factious leaders may kindle a flame within their particular states, but will be unable to spread a general conflagration through the other states. A religious sect may degenerate into a political faction in a part of the Confederacy, but the variety of sects dispersed over the entire face of it must secure the national councils against any danger from that source. A rage for paper money, for an abolition of debts, for an equal division of property, or for any other improper or wicked project will be less apt to pervade the whole body of the Union than a particular member of it. In the same proportion as such, a malady is more likely to taint a particular county or district than an entire state." Well, the rage for paper money is causing economic suicide right now, but I digress. The Confederacy he talks about is under the Articles of Confederation in the 1700s. The Confederacy that seceded from the Union is in the 1860s under the Constitution. That was the greatest faction split of all. Would it have happened under the Articles of Confederation? Unfortunately, we will never know. In conclusion, out of nowhere, with no real evidence or arguments, just peripheral information and rhetorical questions that aren't relevant or even connected, Madison says that it is the character of the Federalists that makes the Constitution worth ratifying. He says, "In the extent and proper structure of the Union, therefore, we behold a Republican remedy for the diseases most incident to a Republican government, and according to the degree of pleasure and pride we feel in being Republicans, ought to be our zeal in cherishing the spirit and supporting the character of Federalists." One has to wonder how Republican remedies will cure Republican diseases. Also, it is that character of the Federalists that the Anti-Federalists are challenging in every Anti-Federalist paper they write. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago. That yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice. Pictures on the wall of great minds who advanced the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts.
It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley.
We've got Pianchi and we've got Cindy still with us, so this is pretty good. Jonathan, do you have Stuart with you, or do we know yet?
Not yet. I thought he would have called already. Stuart Rhodes, the founder and leader of Oath Keepers, said he would call in, and so he may join us from the Federal Detention Center at any moment.
Okay. That'd be great. I don't have Matt Gaetz, confirmation that he's going to call in. In fact, I haven't heard back from his staff at all, so I don't know what's going to happen there. So regardless, if Stuart calls in, I'll send in the recording and hopefully get it to Marjorie Taylor Greene's office as
well. That'd be great. And we
go ahead.
But we, one is not in complete control, even though, from calling from the jail, and that's why I usually have to take the call. Last week, I took the call because in the middle of the show because. You can't control talking from jail.
Oh, I loved it. Are you kidding? That's one of our finest moments ever. we get the leader of the Oath Keepers calling us from jail. Are you kidding? That's gold. I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anything that we can do to help, absolutely.
But it's not like you control. You also said that people tend to hide the phone, the various inmates. Apparently it's a portable phone set. So sometimes the jails are like playing, where's the phone? And there's not a lot of control over that. But I guess we'll talk about other things, but be ready to interrupt because, you have to take that when you can get it. And also the phone system allows 15-minute segments. And so he may have to call back in after 15-minute segments.
But we had like four of them last time. He started about 7 minutes past the third hour, and he stayed most of the, I think, almost till the end of the show. The 15 minutes, I don't care about that because he has the ability to call back. But that was one of the most fascinating shows I think we ever had, simply because, A, you're defending him. B, we don't know, we don't hear from the January 6th political prisoners in the D.C. gulag, or I think he's in Kansas, so I'm not sure where he is, his particular federal prison, but we don't get insight into that. And my goal to match up, people in jail for January 6th, the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, and to be able to connect them with members of Congress who are walking around outside, trying to go inside, but they're not really doing anything. I want to try and inspire the people most likely to do something: Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Robert Massey, Jim Jordan, people like that. I want to try and inspire them actually being able to have them talk to the folks that are in jail. That's the whole purpose of this.
Well, there's a lot to that, and if he were in the DC jail, he probably couldn't do this. Or the Oklahoma detention center, the people there, the guards are a lot less hostile to him. And like some of these people in D.C., they've been falsely accused of being racists and everything. And if you're in the D.C. jail system and you think these people are Nazis and, genetic clones of Adolf Hitler, it might affect how they get treated.
Guards are black too. So you've got black guards guarding predominantly white, inmates who are, and the black guards are being told that the white inmates are white supremacists, Trump believing, Nazi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, that's got to have an effect on them. They're still responsible. And the guards are still responsible for their hate crimes, for their tortures. The DC jail warden is responsible.
One,
and so is, go ahead, the January 6th committee. Yeah, go ahead.
There's one January 6th guy who has been moved. He's moved three times, and each time he's moved, he was beat up by the guards in three different places, which has to be – someone has to put out the word. It's just too coincidental.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's squeeze in a little about the Supreme Court.
How is that happening in America?
Yeah,
we don't know.
Cindy's got a question. Yeah, go ahead, Cindy.
We don't know.
Come on now. If they're being beat up and we have evidence of that, there is nothing that can be done to intervene.
Well, there can, but like Julia Haller and Stanley Woodward, are representing him, and they've tried to bring it to the. Well, again, how does it happen? You file something with the judge, and the judge doesn't do anything about it. That's how it happens. There's nothing you can imagine with these cases that the lawyers haven't filed. The lawyers have filed all this stuff. It's just that it's met with skepticism and inactivity. You know, in other cases, the judges would jump all over.
Pictures or video of this guy being beat up. I just don't understand how that can be ignored.
Well, I mean, it's hard to get pictures out of jail and things like that. But like in his case, it was bad enough that they had to transfer him to the EMTs, and so they do have evidence of it. The other thing too is people have this idea, welcome to jail, but these are people who have not been convicted of any crime. They're being held in advance of trial, so these are people presumed to be innocent. They're being treated like.
I don't think even convicted prisoners, it would be acceptable that they're being beat up by guards.
I agree, but I'm just saying the attitude of some people is like, Republicans suddenly find that realize that jail is hard, and of course these are all these bigoted attitudes about Republicans, but so anyway, there's they're trying to look at, like, for example, Stuart Rhodes had an interview over Zoom with Real America's Voice, and the U.S. Marshals cut him off. And that's, if I had endless amounts of time and things like that, that's a constitutional violation because, again, he's not been, his rights have not been curtailed. He's just being held while waiting for trial. And again, if we had a news media, they'd be screaming bloody murder. If this was the Nixon era or something like that, that this would be unacceptable. But
that's why it's so funny he calls our show, because they don't know. They think he's talking to you. They don't realize he's talking to the audience and our new listeners in Haiti.
We got folks in
Azerbaijan. We got people all over the world. And it's fascinating, but we got the nation, and actually just to let you know, the show's getting more popular, folks. We're getting, some pretty decent increases in our listeners out there, but he's able to talk to the country and also able to maintain a podcast that he and his family can share everywhere. So anything he says on this show is fair game. It's public information. We're a public, forum here for people to call in, for people to broadcast, and for Stuart Rhodes to tell his story. And then especially, like I say, if we can get to send the link to the family, and they'll have a record of everything he's saying, as well any reporter, as well anybody else, any member of Congress.
Well,
I sent a press release
when
he's on, so they have the recordings. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, people do have to be careful, maybe about they saw versus things that they did in terms of admitting certain things.
Okay.
But, that's up to him, and he's been advised and knows what he wants to say. They seem to have – it's funny because they don't seem to have minded the phone calls. I mean, Stuart is like burning up the phones from jail there trying to rebuild the Oath Keepers and things like that. But the Zoom, the television link, that bothered them because they do have a – now in the D.C. jail, he wouldn't even be allowed to sign up for that. But he signed up for that, and then they they cut him off the Zoom link for appearing on television, but it was I don't know why that isn't huge news.
Yeah, and I want to get to Cindy's point because she makes a good one. How is this allowed in America? How is the D.C. jail even allowed to be funded? I mean, when's their next oversight? How is anybody – where are the geldings? The gelding old party is doing nothing about this. They are so tolerant. Ever since they became tolerant of the coup, Mike Pence, who led the coup – people don't know the story – when they suppressed the Trump electors. Then they became tolerant of political prisoners being held in the D.C. jail. Then they became tolerant of torture and tolerant of other prisoners being held in other places. Then they're tolerant of the fact that these people haven't come up for trial. And they're tolerant of the fact that innocent people are having their constitutional rights violated all the time. And they're just completely accepting of everything that's going on. They're accepting of our gas prices, of our energy being shut down, of a propaganda war in Ukraine. They accept everything. There's no government representing us, those of us that want our constitutional rights, that want honesty and government to actually live within what they're supposed to live within, you know, keep the economy, don't restrict the economy, don't sabotage our lives, and don't do all the crap that they're doing. But that D.C. jail should be closed down. It should have been closed down a long time ago.
Well, it should be.
Well, I'm wondering.
Martin, I talk.
Okay, Jonathan, then Cindy. Jonathan, go ahead.
No, I talked to Marjorie Taylor Greene at CPAC. I paid $100 for the VIP thing. And she said she refused to get involved except in the conditions of the D.C. jail. That was the only thing she was going to opine about, because I think she was, I don't know, nervous or worried about anything else.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, what if Matt Gaetz comes up on the show and I ask him what happened during the 7 hours y'all were stuck below the Capitol during the walk-in? You know, is he going
to,
if there are deep state, there might be deep state considerations for his personal safety. He may not be able to say what really happened. I'm going to ask him anyway, because you know, that's my job. But, you know, and
right,
why
like
doesn't Marjorie Taylor Greene? Yeah, go ahead. Why doesn't she want to get more involved?
I was talking to Brad Geyer yesterday, who's like a buddy lawyer of mine, although he's deep down the rabbit hole of Alice in Wonderland and tracking all the provocateurs.
Yeah.
And how it was a setup, which I don't have a problem with, except I don't think the judge is going to let us get it into the trial, so I'm a little nervous about spending so much time on it.
Can you tell it here without it damaging your trial?
I agree. I think he's also a little bit picky about when he's ready to release some of this stuff. But anyway, so
okay,
you know,
we're here.
If you go back to January 1-5, 2021, what was the discussion about? It was not about there's going to be an electoral college vote. It was about, yay, we have enough Republicans to raise a challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember what I'm talking about? It's like,
yep.
Do we have enough, you know, do we have enough Republicans with spines that they're going to object to the specific states?
Mm-hmm.
And his response is, that's what had to be stopped.
Yep. Oh, I agree.
It wasn't the fact that that there's an electoral college. Everybody knew that going on. What was in the news, what was prominent at that time was, we have Republicans who are going to stand up and object to the votes in these states.
That was the whole point of the challenge of the break-in, the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, starting at the exact time that Arizona, one of the seven states with Trump electors, they had to stop Arizona's challenge. Because if Arizona went, then the other states, New Mexico, Nevada, alphabetically, you know, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, those are all going to be challenged. They all have Trump electors. That was the coup. That's why it's so important. I'm sending it to you because I know you might have to go soon. But that was the coup. That was the essence of the coup. That's why the walk-in happened, because they had to stop. This is why the timeline doesn't work, because remember, Trump spoke an hour late. So the Trump supporters, the real Trump supporters, were still back at the Ellipse. They were 45 minutes walk away. But Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Ray Epps, all the other provocateurs, anybody else that might have been in on it, the Capitol Hill police, the D.C. police, all the folks that were part of the coup to stop that electoral challenge had to be in place before Arizona started their challenge. And folks like Kelly Loeffler and all these senators, you know, who talked bravely before January 6th, like you were saying, I'm going to challenge this. We're going to take a look at this. We're going to look at the Trump electors, yada, yada, yada. All of that ended. From Mike Pence and Schumer and Pelosi, and all that ended as soon as the walk-in started. And that was the whole point of the walk-in, was to stop the electoral challenge and then give the folks, this is what I believe, and we've talked about this, give the folks below the Capitol the talk. To tell them, this is the way the world is, you're going to vote for Brandon. That's how I see it happening.
Well, it does bear out. And like I said, the Brad Geyer has spent all this time tracking how many of the, you know, many of the people who were at the, you know, kind of herding people up,
mm-hmm.
he's tracking how they appear in other places for them.
Mm.
And
oh,
they appear
I
in
do
different
want to
clothing.
Talk to this guy. Where else did they appear?
Yeah.
Then we'll get to Cindy.
But I've been telling him for a couple of months he needs to land this airplane, not just He needs to get with a documentary filmmaker and put the put the video all together, because you know, I like the guy. We had a lot of great conversations since September, but every time I have a conversation with him, he gives me the exact same script. And I say, look, you know, you need, this is great, but you need to, you know, you need to bring this down to earth. And you know, because so far he's talking about all these people like Praying Snake and, you know, Gadsden Flag. These code names are people we don't know who they are. The sedition trackers,
Deep Throat,
people on both sides have given them colorful names while we try to figure out who the actual names are. And it sounds goofy, and it just bothers me. Like, you need to find out who these people are. And
yeah, stop
you know,
the, I've got a
you
secret
go to the
thing.
Jury,
you know, well knowledge is power. It's like people who keep secrets. Like, I got a secret. I know something you don't know. I'm more powerful than you. It's a bunch of crap. Say what it is. It's like Deep Throat and Watergate. You know, we eventually found out who it was, and I've forgotten. We can look it up now. But this is the kind of thing that has to be gotten out. At least say it here, just in case something happens to him. I wish him well. I'm just saying. But, you know, stuff happens. We you know, I just found out that one of the prominent people who was talking about COVID early on, who took on Dr. Fascist, ended up dying, you know, rather mysteriously at a too young an age. This stuff happens. Sydney, let me get to you, too, because I know you had a question for Jonathan. Remember?
Well,
you ready?
I'm wondering where people like the EMTs that are witnessing the abuse or the results of the abuse, where are
the
people
prison?
Outside of the jail? Am I...
Wait, what? Are you, with what?
With the prisoner that's being beat up, you know, I'm wondering where the people that aren't tied to the jail are in this process. Why are they not, you know, screaming from the balcony?
I don't know if they view it as their jail scream, but they're not hiding it. The problem is when you go to the authorities who are supposed to deal with it, and they don't care. And this happens, you know, people may not realize how much this happens in our society these days. Now, what ended up happening was that particular case was so egregious that that a judge ended up ordering. I mean, what happened was is that because it got out there, and see, this was in a Virginia jail because there was overflow, and although it happened in several different places, but so you know, when the reports came out, Judge Lambert, who is sometimes a good, you know, he can be a very good judge, a very responsible judge, but he also spends a lot of time just going along with the establishment. He ordered, you know, remember, he's the one that ordered, he found the jailer, the warden in contempt of court for some of these things. And yet, you know, as typical, even for Judge Royce Lambert is, did he follow up? No. You know, you find the warden of the DC jails in contempt, and then what happened to it? Who knows? So, but the point is that this example that I'm giving you was so egregious that it did get attention, and they did get some judges' orders. But there's so many others where it's not as clear, and nobody wants. You know, it's pretty hard to get evidence out of jail, things like that.
Where are Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz in this? Because I know that they were involved. I mean, somebody should be parked outside of their door until they do something. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is coming to Florida on April 9th, and I'll be happy to ask her.
Yeah, me too.
you have to think for what she's done so far, but you then have to ask, where's the follow through?
Exactly. If we've got people getting beat up in jail, there's a problem.
Right. And you know, because I you know, another buddy lawyer is Julia Haller, who, you know, I represent Kelly Meggs in the criminal defense. She represents his wife, Connie Meggs. And so, you know, I deal a lot with Julia Haller and her partner, Stanley Woodward. And they, you know, she was calling me, driving all the way down to the middle of Virginia to go to hearings for some of these things. So I know, you know, I know this more directly than in most cases, and I know that they're trying. They finally got, you know, what Julia Halla had to do is they had to find that there was an outstanding warrant in Pennsylvania, something minor like, you know, a traffic stop or something. And so they used that to get him transferred to Pennsylvania,
okay,
to get him out of the head. But that's the only thing that they could do, and they had to do it with this genius move of finding something why he had to be extradited to Pennsylvania, and he didn't fight it, he agreed. So he got out to a jail in Pennsylvania. That's what they had to do to keep him safe.
I mean, is this really how our justice system works?
Yeah.
That somebody can be beat up in jail, and you can't get them moved because they were beat up, but you have to get them moved on a technicality with a previous...
I mean, even in general, the judges have been questioning whether or not they even have the authority to issue an order about where it's, you know, they're saying, well, it's up to the Marshal Service. It's not up to us. And so, you know, a district court judge, you know, like they used to say about a Navy captain, it's fierce and terrible.
Hmm. See if Pianki has a comment, and then I'm curious to talk about our judicial hearing. But, yeah. Oh, Jonathan, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, well, just to give an example, Royce Lamberth in particular, he when I was there with Larry Klayman in the 90s, we were in a hearing, and he passed out some documents. And somebody asked, are these documents under seal? And his response is, well, if I just handed them out, they're not under seal. He didn't mean that he didn't make a mistake. He said, by his act as a district court judge, it would become no longer, you know, he has that much power. Is that if he does it, it's done. And so here we go. No, wait. Hold on. I don't know who this is.
Ooh. This is exciting. Pianki, do you have a comment real quick? Because we've been hanging out here.
No, I'm listening.
Okay. Yeah. So this is what happened last time, is that Jonathan took a call, and looks like Jonathan had to drop for a second. So he had to, last time he had Stuart Rhodes, and they may be talking. He may connect Stuart. This is what he did last time. He connected Stuart to the show through his phone, which is fascinating. I mean, I've never, you know, I was so amazed that we could actually do that Stuart Rhodes calls him from jail, calls Jonathan because he's his attorney, and then Jonathan puts him on the show with us. I mean, that's pretty wild stuff. You know, anyway. Okay. Cindy, did you have a further comment for me?
No.
I find this all quite fascinating.
Like I said, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe, is coming to meet with Matt Gaetz. That would be a great time to ask some questions about this.
Well, let's head down. Let's do it again. let's go chat and see what happens. Well, what I'm hoping to do is get endorsements from both those folks. We have another doctor from the rallies, Brian Artis, who I met, who was Jonathan's back again, who's also endorsed our bills as well.
So you're
back, Jonathan.
And so is Stuart Rhodes, who just called in.
Oh, wonderful. Stuart, greetings. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, sir?
Hey, doing fine. All things considered, how you doing?
We were just talking about, I think Sansel got, I think it was Sansel, got moved three times, and each time he moved, he got beat up in jail, and they were trying to understand how that, you know, which could not be a coincidence, and talking about things like that.
Where was he moved to?
He was moved down to Central Virginia, and then, as I said, Julia Haller managed to find a warrant in Pennsylvania for something minor, and they used that to get him moved to Pennsylvania, just to get him out of the reach of the people who were apparently had some kind of orders, because that doesn't happen three times in a row by accident. So anyway, we were talking a little bit
I've been very fortunate. I've had very good treatment both in Texas and here in Oklahoma. The guards have been professional and courteous. No issues whatsoever.
But they don't think that you're a white supremacist in a mostly minority city, so that helps.
No, I'm certainly not one. But that's the problem. You don't have to be a white supremacist to be called one nowadays. You just have to be a conservative. and they smear you with that.
We were talking a good deal yesterday in a small attorney thing about that, about how, you know, that everybody, people who don't know you and don't care about the truth, maybe we'll say differently, but those, everyone who knows you, you know, talks about how you've rejected white supremacists and racism and not allowed it to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my vice president at the time of the January 6th fiasco was black. He's a black cop from Montana. And our bylaws from day one, back in 2009, have made it very clear that no one who discriminates along racial lines can be a member. We track directly with the U.S. military's policies. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's interesting. So it not only is it your desire, but it flows out of the military backgrounds of many of your members.
Oh, sure. And hey, I'm a quarter Mexican, and half my family is Mexican, and a lot of them are Filipinos. I'm just not a good candidate for being a white supremacist.
Yeah, and your attorney, talking among the attorneys yesterday, you know, they were mentioning that you're very proud of your Hispanic
Yeah, I mean, my mother was the first person to graduate high school. She picked grapes when she was a kid, and, you know, my grandparents picked asparagus, and it was all up and down in San Fernando Valley in California to work the fields, you know, and I went out on two summers and picked grapes with them just to experience what that was like, just to see what it was like.
It's hard work is what it is.
So I came from.
Yeah,
it is very hard work. That's right.
Yeah. I got a question for you though.
So you know, but then I was the first one to go to college, and off we go. That's how it's supposed to be done in this country. You know, you each generation gets better.
Yeah.
So with so much on the plate, do you want to lead with what's on your mind, Greg?
Well, yeah. Just, in fact, I want Stuart to have the opportunity to tell the story as much as possible. My question is something we were talking about earlier: the fact that that you, Stuart, and all the folks who are political prisoners of the deep state from the January 6th, you know, Marxist committee, and I'll state it just as plainly as that, so everybody knows exactly where I'm coming from. You're innocent until proven guilty. How are you being held exactly? Because you're in jail, which is where we put people who are convicted. Yet you haven't been convicted. You haven't even been to trial yet. So are you being treated differently than people that have been convicted, or are you being treated exactly as people who have been convicted? What's your status in jail?
I'm exactly the same. I'm in prison. I mean, I'm in a federal detention facility in Oklahoma that used to be a penitentiary here in Oklahoma. And I'm in solitary confinement, basically. And they're saying it's for my own good. I'm not afraid of the inmates. The inmates treat me with respect, but the U.S. Marshals Service basically said that because of my high political profile, they don't want anything to happen to me, and so they put me in solitary. That's where I'm at.
Are you under security cameras so that you're being watched and there's a recording of so something doesn't happen to you?
No, it's not like that. I mean, the cell is private. There's a window in the door. The guards walk by and do a check and check on you every half hour or so. Like I said, though, they treat me pretty courteously. There's no one watching me, you know, use the restroom or anything like that. So it's not that bad.
But it's still
I'm in
solitary.
A concrete box. And then when I go out for exercise, I'm in another concrete box with chain link fence. So that's just the reality of segregation. You have no contact with any inmates.
So you have no contact with the other inmates?
No, because we're what's called segregation. And a lot of guys are in here because they're ex-gang members and they've got, you know, death threats against them, or guys who the child molesters want the segregation until they get assigned someplace. So this is a federal holding facility, in between. You're on your way to where you're going to be doing your time. This is where they also hold people like me who are pre-trial.
But if the conditions are the same
for
as
me,
prison, see, this doesn't make sense to me. This is a question for Jonathan. How can you be held in prison conditions, prison-like solitary confinement, things like that, when you're still innocent until proven guilty? Nothing's been proven. This is the part I don't understand.
Well, most people don't understand. And it's like, you know, because in every one of these bail hearings where we've it's been a close call, somebody's just easily let out. There's been a lot of discussion about putting conditions on release. So, like Brandon Straka, who I didn't really know who he was before this, but I guess he was part of the walkaway movement and he had a big media following. He was just posting about his ankle bracelet and home confinement, and you know, so and I think one of the Proud Boys offered to put up $1 million bond and have surveillance cameras outside of his you know, his home to show that, mm-hmm. you know, nobody's, you know, they're not like Nazi clan meetings, which, you know, I say that knowing that that makes no sense, but that's what they're thinking. That, you know, coming in and out of, and, you know, people bringing in computers that he's not supposed to use the internet, not supposed to use the computers. So the conditions that could apply without them being in prison, the judges are rejecting. They're saying, no, we're not, you know, we don't think any conditions short of imprisonment could, you know, could guarantee the safety or assure, like nobody can guarantee anything, of, you know, that it's like, you know, Stuart Rhodes, for example, and, you know, I like to, it's probably my brother's bad influence. I make fun of things that, you know, if he got out, he'd basically be Napoleon Bonaparte rampaging across Europe. And, you know, so.
Yeah, what about bail? Where's bail? How about out in your own recognizance?
We
don't have a criminal record, as far as I know, and you can state it for the record.
I have nothing but traffic tickets my entire life.
So why aren't you on bail?
I'm 56 years old. It's my very first time being arrested.
Yeah.
Now, and just to, like, out of order, because that's the way my brain works, is that yesterday, and Stuart may not know this, is that Trevor McFadden, who's his behavior in these cases, I don't think is remarkable for a judge, and for the fact it's remarkable in the sense he's willing to break ranks with the witch hunt. Yesterday he gave a January 6th person just a $5,000 bond and like a short period of probation, where the government wanted 75 days in jail, on the argument that the January 6th defendant was being prosecuted in part because of his political beliefs, and the judge agreed with that. He said if you compare the left wing protesters, and we have to file motions for selective prosecution, I just have to get around to, is mm-hmm. that the left wing rioters like in Kavanaugh were released on a $35 to $50 fine within 5 hours. And you now have a federal judge agreeing with that, saying that, I know, I'm just going to impose a fine and because you're treating these people differently based on their politics, whether they're right wing or left wing. Yeah. So I'm going to ignore all that stuff and just treat them, you know, and just sentence them based upon, you know, just the fact that they went into the Capitol, not based upon that they don't agree with the election. They refuse to kneel before the thought.
Thank you.
Yeah, Stuart.
So
and then I got
that just happened.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. How about $35 fine? $35 fine sounds reasonable.
Let me say something about that real quick, Greg. So
yeah,
make it clear, the federal rules favor release pre-trial. The federal rules, the statutes, favor release pre-trial. And the only way they can hold you is if you're a flight risk or you're a threat to the community. That's the only two bases in the law for holding you. But they bootstrap my political opinions into a threat to the community. Like the judge in Texas, who's supposed to be a conservative, she even said that there's no guarantee that I couldn't lead a revolution if I was released. Now, there's no... even though they would restrict me with no internet, no access to the phone to call anybody except my attorneys, absolutely destroying my First Amendment right to free speech, they still were not satisfied with that. Ankle bracelets, monitoring, she still thought that I was crafty enough to go and lead a revolution. And so I'm really being punished for my political
Oh, hell, I could lead a revolution.
The fact that I was outspoken.
I could lead a revolution. Anybody could lead a revolution. See, this comes under prior restraint. Something I'm working with some folks in Australia on an Australian Bill of Rights, and a brand new concept to them is prior restraint. In other words, you're arrested now for something you might do in the future, maybe. And this is
preventive detention. That's exactly right. When I was a student at Yale Law School, we held a whole symposium on this idea of preventive detention, and that's where the professors wanted to go. That's where they want to go.
Interesting. Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to give Stuart a chance to, because I was trying to arrange for Matt Gaetz to call in so you could actually talk to a member of Congress, and hopefully that'll get passed on to Marjorie Taylor Greene. So I'm going to send this to them after the show. So I want to give you a chance to say whatever you want to say to members of Congress about the situation. Then I want to go through our panel. We've got Cindy on the line. We've got Bianchi on the line. And, of course, Jonathan to respond to anything. So let me start with that. Just if I'll just mark the time here. So we're at 9 minutes past the hour so they can find it. If you could talk directly to members of Congress about the situation, about anything you want to talk about, I just want to let you go and tell us what you think, message you want to give to Congress.
Hey, we were there to, as we had been in every single Trump rally in D.C., all of the Stop and Steal rallies, to do security for events, for speakers, and also to protect Trump supporters after the rallies from Antifa violence in the streets. And OFTUBER has done that through the entire Trump administration, starting with Trump's inauguration back in 2017. We were there in D.C. on the ground escorting women and children and disabled people who Antifa likes to attack. And all through his administration, thousands of times across the country, we protected Trump supporters from Antifa violence outside of President Trump's campaign rallies, but also free speech events across the country, including the March Against Sharia for Back for America. They asked us to protect their people, and we did that across the country with zero incidents. No use of force, never even had to draw a pistol, never had to use a weapon, never had to use force at all, because Antifa is afraid of us. They're afraid of the police and military within Oath Keepers. And so we're not wild-eyed, crazy people that run around in the streets attacking people. Hardly, it's the exact opposite. That's who we protect from. And on January 6th, you know, two of our security teams, unfortunately, decided to go into the Capitol. And, you know, was there reasons for doing so is a separate matter. But the point is, just because two of our teams decided to go in on their own volition, the left has used that as a gift for them to demonize us and, of course, to attack the entire MAGA movement, even though almost 1,000 people walked into the Capitol, most of them, you know, just walking in like tourists and taking pictures and walking back out. The left and the establishment have singled out Oath Keepers and Proud Boys as their poster children of the dangerous right. And, of course, they smeared us as being...
You have 1 minute remaining.
Back in February 17th of 2021, Benny Thompson, who went on to chair the January 6th committee, filed his lawsuit, reclaimed that Oath Keepers and Proud Boys are white supremacists, that President Trump and Giuliani and Oath Keepers and Proud Boys targeted the U.S. Capitol, and that's their game plan, is to go after Trump. That's been from day one. All they're doing now is going and creating the evidence they need, the fake evidence, to get where they want to go, which is Trump, eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you have to go, and I know you can call back, and I got Josie in the line, too. So I'll let you continue the story. And again, as much as you want to tell, as much of a message as you have for Congress. So you probably got less than a minute left right now. Jonathan, do you have a quick reaction?
I'll call back.
Stuart back when you can. Okay, thank you, Stuart. I really appreciate it.
Keep up.
All right. Jonathan? This is amazing. I love these conversations. I guess Jonathan's on the phone. All right, he's probably talking to Stuart.
Find my mute again. So yeah, he'll call back and I get hopefully I'll be able to patch him back. But, okay.
Thank you for using Global Tellink.
I love that voice. I just
that's
cracked
awesome.
Me up. Yeah, yeah. So Josie, now that you're on the line, all right, Jonathan, go ahead first, then Josie, and then we'll get Stuart back.
No.
Comes back.
I actually wanted to ask some leading questions to Stuart, so
okay.
Why don't you go ahead if you.
All right, Justin, why don't you go ahead,
yeah,
and then you'll get a chance to talk to Stuart also when he comes back. But I want to get the full story, and I want to have it in a place where I've marked it on the tape so that these guys can listen to it in Congress. Go ahead, Josie.
Good morning. Good morning, Jonathan. Good morning, everybody. It just blows my mind that how can we allow this to happen in America? I grew up in communist, and this scene you see in communist, not here in America. These people haven't been to trial. These people, I mean, how can you arrest somebody and put him this long in jail? And a lot of the prisoners in D.C. are being tortured and beat up and everything. And this is a disgrace that we have allowed. And look at this clown. What's his name? The one that just got convicted and got released. Jesse Smollett.
Yeah, who should be in jail.
Smollett.
Yes, well, he's got black privilege.
He's a liar,
it's okay.
A racist,
so, yeah.
This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Oh,
thank you for using Global Tellink.
And you know,
we
there's evidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
there's
I got to
evidence
back.
on this guy, and then they release him. You know, but go ahead and with your call.
Well,
right,
I said, he's got black privilege. It's different. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and I want to welcome the members of the Marshal Service, the U.S. Marshal Service that might be listening in. You guys can talk to us, too. Just call 215-383-3832. All right, Stuart, where we left you off, you're talking about the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and these false accusations of white supremacy. And I'm going to just let you pick it up from there.
Right. So out of the gate, this is important for everyone to understand, is that back in February 17th of 2021, just weeks after January 6th, Dane Thompson filed his civil claim against Trump, President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, alleging a conspiracy among all of us to invade the Capitol and disrupt Congress. And he said that doing so was driven by racist animus to disenfranchise black people, is what he said. And he hired the NAACP president to come with him as his attorney, and they did multiple press conferences and interviews where they called Oath Keepers and Proud Boys white supremacist organizations. I'm going to sue for defamation because Oath Keepers from day one has been very clear in our bylaws and all of our behavior that we are opposed to white supremacy or any kind of racism, black supremacy, any kind. And so my vice president at the time that he filed this lawsuit was actually a black police officer. So it's absurd, and of course it's got nothing to do with the truth. It's the smear. The smear from the left has always been that if you stand up for the Constitution, if you believe in preserving our republic, that you must be a racist. And that's their demonizing smear that they use against us. And that's but the important point for everyone to understand is that from day one, before he even sat on the committee, before he became the chairman of the committee, he already made his mind up that Trump was guilty and that everybody else below him was guilty of a conspiracy led by Trump. And they're going after Trump. They're walking up that ladder with all these prosecutions. They arrested me. They arrested Enrique Trujillo, the leader of the Proud Boys. He's now been indicted. They're going up that ladder to make true the smear that Trump and all of us conspired to enter the Capitol to disrupt Congress and attempt to overthrow the government, when it's them who've overthrown our government through their coup of stealing the election. It's a direct projection to cover their tracks. They made January 6th as bad as possible. And I urge members of Congress to look into who was in charge of security that day. I hear it was DOJ and, of course, Pelosi as a leader of Congress. So they need to look into what really happened that day, who facilitated to make it as bad as possible to smear, just like the Reichstag fire in Germany, to make it the big emergency they can use to hammer the MAGA movement going forward. That's what they're going to do. They're going to persecute conservatives, patriots, libertarians, Trump supporters, you're all going to be persecuted just like you saw any political opposition being persecuted in Stalinist Russia. It's the same exact program.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Let me just say, Cindy, Pianchi, and then Josie. We're going to kind of go around our panel. So, Jonathan, and thank you, Stuart,
just
for that.
To comment,
yeah.
I don't think you can say it any more clearly than you already did, but where do you see these investigations heading?
Indict Trump. They're going to indict him. People need to get rid of this idea that somehow that can't happen. They stole the election. It was a grossly unconstitutional election, not just fraudulent, but also unconstitutional. Did not comply with the clear requirements of Article 2 for the presidential election. They're not going to stop. They're going to prosecute Trump. That's why he and his supporters need to realize that they need to be supporting all the January 6th defendants. Doesn't matter who they are, what they're accused of, whether you like them or not. The point is, this is a way to get Trump and to kill the MAGA movement. And they're going to continue to roll through the MAGA movement. When Trump goes down and put him in prison, probably his son as well. He's also been accused of conspiring with the president. And the January 6th committee just recently came out and said that Trump is guilty of crimes.
So what they're really doing is stealing the 2024 election with this committee, right? By preventing Trump from running?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, he'll be in prison. How can he run for office? He's in prison.
Yeah. So this is something, Jonathan, maybe I don't know if you can use this or not, but it seems to me that based on what Stuart is saying, this committee is really about stealing the 2024 election by preventing Trump from running.
Well, I do believe that. And let me just say before we let the other panelists, is that if you look at the substance of what the committee is talking about, it has nothing to do with the security of the Capitol. It's about how dare you believe things that disagree with me. Mm-hmm. It's all about politics. It's all about people said things that we think are wrong. We think are misinformation. How dare you organize a rally? they're going after, I forget who it was, Ali Alexander and others in the media and the Hill, attacking them on the grounds that they planned the rallies that preceded the attack. Well, they preceded the attack. So what? Now it's illegal to have a political rally. It's like, so the substance of this entire attack is you don't agree with me politically. I mean, if you look carefully at what they're doing, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's really my theory of lies that the initial lie was the coup, and you have to have daily lies. And this committee is about telling the daily lies to cover the previous day's lies. And they're going to have new lies tomorrow. And they're going to have to keep lying all the way through to maintain the lies so that they can hide what they're ultimately doing. Like we're talking about here is putting Trump in jail and stealing any chance of anybody doing anything different than the deep state. And this is both Republican and Democrat. You look at Mike Pence, who basically pushed Brandon into the White House, you know, by denying the Trump electors in the seven battleground states. This is all very organized. This is very deep state. And you can see what happens when the government chooses the government. You know, the country sucks. Everything's going wrong. And that's why this is so important to get Trump back, or at least get our country back. Let's go to Cindy and then Pianchi and then Josie. Cindy, do you want to get in on this?
Well, I'm just kind of in listening mode, but I'm wondering, are they giving you any timeline on when you will go to trial? I mean, what happened to having a speedy trial in America?
Sure. It's a good question.
Well, frankly, I would prefer to delay because we haven't gotten full discovery. I haven't got my phone back. My phone is a treasure trove of exculpatory evidence, and so is the phone of our legal counsel, Kelly Sorrell, who was the general counsel for Oath Keepers. Her phone was taken. She hasn't even been indicted, but they've had her phone down for about 8 months, and they won't give it back. And same goes for Whip, Michael Green, who was our team leader on the ground, a black retired police officer. They have his phone as well, and they won't give it back. So they're hiding exculpatory evidence from the defense.
Do you think anything left of it? Just out of curiosity, I'm sorry, Cindy. If you get your phone back, do you think they're going to give you the phone in the condition that they took it? Do you think there'll be anything on it that you can use?
I don't know.
Okay. I was just curious. Cindy, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, you know, what's the process to get it back? And isn't that part of why you go to trial, is to share the evidence beforehand and then go to trial?
Well, like let Jonathan get on this. He's the criminal attorney. But, you know, we have a right to exculpatory evidence. And like I said, they're delaying and dragging their feet and giving it to the defense. They want to give it to the defense in electronic formats that are almost useless.
Yeah, again, everything that you can think of, we've asked for, the various defense attorneys. There's nothing that anybody can think of that we haven't made motions, made requests, and things like that. And the government is just ignoring these specific requests and dumping gigantic quantities of trash on us. You know, it's an old tactic that, you know, because then we have to look at it all, and we don't have any time to get ready for trial. And when we bring it to the attention of the judges don't care. So they know they don't have to comply because the judges aren't going to make them.
Hmm. All right. Pianchi, let's get you in the conversation. Do you have a question for Stuart or a comment?
Well, no. What he's saying is absolutely right. This is nothing more than to be delayed as far as it can be in the future in order to go after Donald Trump, even if the 2024 election was held in 2030. They will continue to delay it. And the services that that organization was performing, especially to protect Trump supporters, American supporters of the U.S. Constitution at those rallies, were well needed, because we have heard story after story of how people wearing MAGA hats are, you know, carrying an American flag, how they were attacked. The one organization, not the Proud Boys, but the other organization, they had black members in the Ferguson area during the Ferguson riots. So how could they say that they're racist? So it's a lot going on here.
Don't let that
That's right. In fact, in Ferguson, our first client we protected was a black woman who owned a bakery, Natalie, of Natalie's Cakes and More. We were there to protect her against threats from arsonists. They threatened to burn down her entire block of buildings, which would have killed people because there were apartments above the shops. So from the day one, we protect all Americans of every political persuasion and every race. We don't care about your politics. We just care about, you know, preserving your rights. And because we do that, the left, of course, does not want that to happen because they want to see the cities burn. And the two biggest groups that protect people in the streets have been Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. And so, of course, they want to take us down and clear the way for Antifa to have free reign in the streets.
How did people find you? How did they come to you to ask you for help? How did people find out that that's what you did?
Well, in Ferguson, when the first night of rioting happened, our local members went out and asked the shop owners if any of them want protection. And her windows had been broken out the night before. It's kind of like Kristallnacht for local black shop owners. They broke all their windows and then threatened her and told her, tonight we're going to come back and burn this bitch down. That's what they told her. And so our local guys heard that, offered protection. She agreed. And then we brought in people from across the country. A lot of our guys are ex-military and ex-law enforcement and very squared away. And so we preserved that block of buildings.
Wow. It'd be nice if you had some ex-members of Congress, too, but I don't know about that. Pianki, do you have a question or a further comment? Then I'll get to Joseph.
Well, yeah, they did. They preserved the built. They preserved the meat house there on Florissant, West Florissant, across the street from the Chinese restaurant. The building you're talking about, the bakery, was around there on North Florissant, down the street from the tire company. I know exactly. Down the street from not only the tire company, but you right there at the corner of where that tavern is, it's got the stuffed gorilla there sitting on the lot. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Wow. Small world.
What?
Go ahead, Josie. Do you have
Josie,
then Cindy.
What I
all right, Cindy, go ahead, Craig.
What I know is when everything gets done with this whole pollution and everything, all the prisoners will be rewarded big times. We already know about that. Also, what I was going to say, President Trump will not be running 2024. He already ran. He already won. He's coming back to claim what he won. That's exactly what's happening. That's why when people ask, are you running for 2024? He never really answers it. But we already know that he will not be running. He's coming to take charge. That's all I can tell you. And I'm just upset that a lot of the judges, Republicans, they're nowhere to be found right now. But a lot of this is an agenda to let the American people see the darkness and the corruption and the criminals the Democrat Party are. And we are bringing them down completely, including many of the Republicans will go to prison, many. So just stay put. And you will see
no,
the glory that God will provide at the end. Let me finish. It will be a blessing what's going to happen, and we already know about it.
Josie, respectfully, waiting on Trump or anyone else to
I don't care what you said.
This.
I already know. I'm very involved.
Hold on, Josie.
With Mike Clint.
Hold on, Josie.
Cindy Powell.
Yeah.
Yes. It's okay. It's okay. You can have your opinion.
I would just ask.
Go ahead.
When Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz meet here in April, what could I ask them or approach them with that would benefit you most?
Stuart? Yeah.
Well, I think the first thing is to reinforce that this is about decapitating the MAGA movement, taking away the protectors in the streets, but also getting President Trump.
You have 1 minute remaining.
And I would encourage them to speak out. I mean, President Trump should be holding fundraisers or even funding legal defense, but he can certainly hold fundraisers. And we could raise all the money we need to overnight if he did that. So I would encourage them to approach him. At least do that. That's all it takes, really, is to send out an email to his massive list saying, support these people. We shouldn't have to scrape with mom-and-pop donations to fund our legal defense, to hire researchers and investigators and attorneys.
Okay.
When you come back, I'm going to ask you if you have a message for Trump, because I know Matt Gaetz has Trump on speed dial. I mean, they talk all the time. He even talked about that at the last meeting.
Well,
so let's do that. Let's get you a chance.
Why doesn't he give it? Why doesn't he have a clear statement on that when he calls back? And I'll cover.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, when he calls back
about the expenses,
I'm just open it up to a Trump statement. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you for using Global Telling.
So while he's calling back, I hope. I mean, are a lot of expenses that are not specific to a particular defendant. You know, for defending the Republic pays my time. For Kelly Meigs. And we'll have an announcement if he's able to call back about other efforts. But there's so many things, like he hinted at, that are not, you know, that are experts. We need to have people come in and testify about the Insurrection Act, about all kinds of different things.
Can you hold like a symposium or a rally or something like that? I wanted to have a concert. I was hoping to get like a Ted Nugent, you know, and Chris Rock concert, you know, as a benefit for these folks. That'd be an idea. But we need a symposium. We need a convention. We need like a CPAC style convention where these experts come in and they speak and it's all in video and people can see it and they can see all the different things that are happening and the things that should be happening with these people, like bail. You know, instead of preventive custody, all these things that should be happening and just do a real education of what the coup is. We need basically a coup symposium so that people understand what actually happened January 6th because they don't know. They've got the lies. And
why is Cindy? Trump not more out in front about this?
That's a good question.
Target really is him, why is he not taking a more active role in helping to raise money and defending the people that are in prison? He's certainly not in prison right now.
Why isn't the Republican Party doing it? They've got money. Why isn't Heritage? Why isn't Cato? Why isn't the Hoover Institute? Why aren't these big foundations? Why aren't rich conservatives getting together and doing something?
Good question.
There's a lot. Everybody's dropping the ball. What's that? Oh, Stuart back?
Good question.
That was Stuart back.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're back. Yeah. Feel free to listen.
Yeah, it reminds me of the quote from the German pastor, Pastor Niemeyer, right, where he said, first they came for the trade unionists, but I wasn't a trade unionist, so I said nothing. Then they came for the communists, and I wasn't a communist, and so I said nothing. And by the time they got to him, no one else left to speak out. People need to understand, if you're anywhere on the political right, they want you dead. They want you in prison, or they want you at the bottom of a mass grave. That's what communists do when they get power. I'm just being blunt. That's where it ends. If you don't stand up now and unite, that's where it's going to end for you. So you need to come together now, and all the rich Republicans should be donating to our defense. There's no reason why they should not. It's just cowardice, all I can say.
Yeah. Well, let's get a message for Trump. And like I say, I'm sending this to Matt Gaetz and his campaign folks right after the show today. So if you could talk directly to President Trump, feel free.
Yeah, President Trump, you know, we appreciate you stating in a recent rally that you'd be willing to pardon the January 6th defendants if you were elected president again. We thank you for that. But we urge you to see this for what it is. This is going to be a decapitation strike against you and your family and the entire MAGA movement. They're going to indict you. It might even indict your son, you know, Don Jr. The lawsuits filed against you starting with February 17th, 2021, make that very clear. They accuse you, Giuliani, and Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, I'm the president of Oath Keepers, of conspiring to enter the Capitol and disrupt Congress. It's a complete lie, but that's their strategy. All of these so-called investigations have nothing to do with finding the truth of January 6th, but only in making that lie true. They go and manufacture evidence by coercing confessions. They just recently rolled over an Oath Keeper who they've convinced to commit perjury, to lie on the stand and say that I planned to enter the Capitol way back in November of 2020. So it's an absolute lie, but they're building their fake case to get to you eventually. So you need to stand up now and raise money for all the January 6th defendants. I don't care who they are. We're all in the same boat because eventually it's going to be you. They're going to indict you. And unless you encourage other conservatives to come together, all you got to do is use your list, raise the money that we need for our legal defense. We need to hire effective counsel. We need to hire investigators and experts. It takes money to defend against this Goliath of the DOJ. And they're using all their resources with hundreds of lawyers to come after us to get to you, just the same way they did with the Enron debacle that Sidney Powell wrote about in her book, License to Lie. It's exactly the same strategy. So we encourage you and urge you to bring the right together and unite them in defending themselves by defending us.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. Let's do our same thing again, Jonathan, Cindy, Pianchi, and Josie. Jonathan?
Why don't we just ask, to add on to that, you want to say what some of the Oath Keepers and supporters did this week on the you want to say it, Stuart?
No, go ahead.
We created, okay, this week the Patriots Legal Defense Fund, Inc. was created with six initial members of the board of directors and getting organized to raise funds. but, you know, that's very, very hard to do without people stepping up and doing the thing. So there is now to hoping to work in harmony with other efforts. And, you know, we fully support the Patriot Freedom Project and Defending the Republic. But to fill in some of these gaps, there is a vehicle being formed to allow these fundraising that Stuart Rhodes was just talking about to be processed and above board and have a CPA handling it all and making sure everything is done above board and transparent and legally proper.
And not just for Oath Keepers, for all the defendants across the board.
Right, but some of the board members, you know, have stepped up, and we've got other people too. Jerome Bell, Chief Petty Officer running for Congress, is on the board, may well be the chair. But yes, and so we're going to try to fill in what isn't already being done, which is basically a lot. The government's going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on this. So, you know, they're using howitzers and we've got rocks by comparison. So,
well, they got our money.
They're using our tax dollars
against us. They're using our tax dollars to impose a Marxist, you know, globalist cabal on what was a once free nation under a constitution. You know, if we could cut off their funding, I'd love to be able to do that, but Congress won't even do that. They won't even cut off the DOJ funding. They won't cut off the funding for this committee. They won't cut off anything. Yeah. Anyway, I got a question that I thought of. Stuart, you've got the Oath Keepers, you've got the Proud Boys. One of the things that's happening with school boards across the country is that parents are now running for school boards. Is there any way that Oath Keepers and Proud Boys could run for the judgeships in some of these districts or some start to replace some of these judges with decent people? Because, you know, as far as I know, most places, including the Supreme Court, not only do you not have to be a judge to be a judge, you don't even have to be a lawyer in many cases. And Jonathan, you might be
wrong. Well,
that's
true for Justice of the Peace. Yeah, that's true for Justice of the Peace down to lower levels. But in most places, above Justice of the Peace, you must have a law degree. But there are Patriot attorneys. Jonathan's one, and they should be running for judgeships. And so it's not just Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, but all Patriots need to start supporting, and all the rich Republicans need to fund them. Look at what George Soros did. He went all through the country and funded far-left district attorneys and took over in all the Democrat-dominated areas and plugged in his preferred prosecutors and also judges. So the political right does need to do the exact same thing from the grassroots level up. Your county judge matters. Who your county judge is makes a huge difference. Look at Denver. You just had a radical leftist who murdered a Trump supporter in broad daylight, shot an unarmed man in the face and killed him in Denver, just let out by a leftist judge who dismissed the charges. So, you know, this is what happens when the bench is controlled by your enemies.
Yeah. That's hatred for you right there. That's amazing. Jonathan, do you have a follow-up?
You know,
to Cindy, and we'll go around. Oh, or is that Pianchi?
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, one of the problems, you got that Garland sitting at the head of the DOJ. But when this is all said, every one of these individuals that have been treated misjustly should receive reparations. I say $10 million per.
Well, are you going to be able to sue after this is all over? Stuart, do you know about that? Or Jonathan?
They were denied their civil rights, yes. I mean, you got people filing for reparations for less of a reason.
Mm-hmm.
This is right here in our time, right here in our face in contemporary times.
Well, it's like people that are incarcerated for, you know, and then they're found that the DNA evidence proves they didn't do it, whatever the crime was. They're convicted wrongly, and they're able to sue for millions of dollars. You know, for having their years taken away from them. Stuart, you should be up for the same thing, for a complete denial of constitutional rights, the fact that you're not out on bail and your own recognizance and all these other things. And everything that's happening to you, I hope you're documenting so that you can put this into one big, fat lawsuit. I'm not sure where it would go.
Yeah,
well,
the problem is, though, is the same exact judiciary that refused to even look at the unconstitutionality and the fraud of the election is the same judiciary that's also turning a blind eye to what's being done to us. It's the same. It's the same people, and so I don't have a whole lot of confidence in a case like that prevailing in the current environment. I really don't.
No, but one, if you one cannot, like for example, Joshua James pled guilty on a thing. He cannot sue. If someone pleads guilty to any count, they cannot sue.
Mm-hmm. And they know that.
If they're found guilty but overturned on appeal, they could sue.
Okay.
I'm never going to plead. I made that very clear. I will not plead, nor I will ever bear false witness against anyone. I don't care what they do to me. They can throw me under the jail. I will never get on stand and say that some another patriot did something they did not do. Unfortunately, that's what they're doing with Josh James, that they've pressured him into pleading out to the main charge, which is unusual. Usually you plead to a lesser offense. But they had him plead out to the main charge of seditious conspiracy, and the whole point is to put him on the stand and have him test a lie to say that we did something we did not do, conspired to enter the Capitol, and that's the way to get to Trump, to coerce more plea bargains. That's what they do. They coerce people with threats of the rest of their life in prison, and they force them to agree to lie, to test a lie, to commit perjury.
Well, Stuart, let me ask you a different question, if I and that's important, but I just
no, go ahead.
Time short.
Go ahead,
in the Proud Boys case, they argue that the best measure of what people agreed to in a conspiracy is what they actually did. Now they say that to mean that they have no evidence whatsoever of any conspiracy. This is a proxy for having zero evidence of a conspiracy. But so they say, well, what did the Proud Boys do? They met and went straight to the Capitol. In your case, if you're going to say, like, what did you guys actually do, what do you say about, I mean, the Oath Keepers all kind of dribbled over to the Capitol in different groups, didn't they?
Well, here's the thing. We were slotted to protect Ali Alexander's Stop the Steal rally on the Capitol grounds. He had a permitted event for Area 8, which is the northeast corner of the Capitol grounds. That's exactly why our guys were marching from the Ellipse. They were escorting speakers for Ali Alexander's rally to the Capitol grounds to then protect that rally that Ali Alexander had already planned to hold on the Capitol grounds. But of course, the media and the DOJ act like that never happened, that was not why they were going to the Capitol. But that's why they were going there. That's why I was there. And they didn't have evidence against me for it. This is what I told Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know, I know there's the suspicion that I was somehow a Fed because I hadn't been indicted. They had no evidence against me. I didn't go into the Capitol. I didn't tell anybody else to go in. They had nothing. They had to go and create fake evidence by coercing other detainees to then test the lie. And they got Josh James to do that. My guess is before they even indicted me, they already had him in their back pocket, and that's why they indicted me. That's why it took an entire year. They had to go and create the fake evidence. And that's what they're going to do to Trump. That's why he has not been indicted yet either, because they're creating the fake evidence right now.
Yeah, let me add, and then let's go to the panel. But, you know, I've had so many people say, you know, in fact, one small case I have right now, like, well, they can't, you know, I mean, like, we didn't do anything wrong, therefore they can't say anything. Like, well, that doesn't protect you. I've had even my friend Christine, when they were trying to go after her, and I got charges thrown out against her, you know, 12 years ago. Like, but I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, no, you didn't do anything wrong. But that doesn't matter.
Innocence is no defense? That's what you're saying, innocence is no defense.
Because the thing is that the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys are targets of political convenience. It's like looking for your car keys a mile away from your car because the light is better under the street light. I mean, you know, these are not the people who did what people are concerned about, but it's politically advantageous to, you know, there's no profit in going after people who actually beat up police. They're you know, what do I, you know, who benefits? So
no,
going
no,
after the Oath Keepers.
Stuart's part of the cog in the wheel of the left-wing coup. I mean, he's playing a role for them. You know, they have accused him. They're making up evidence against him. You know, Stuart, you are part of the coup to steal the election, to put Trump in jail, all this kind of stuff. Because obviously,
well, targeting is part of the coup. Like I said, it's a capitation strike. It's a capitation strike against protectors. Well, it's also a way to build a case against Trump, is to demonize us, make us the poster children, you know, put us out there as these fake, you know, evil, the fake persona of evil white supremacists. You know, I mean, even Proud Boys, half the Proud Boys we saw in D.C. were black or Hispanic. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But they want to smear us and make us the demons so that there's a tainted jury pool that will automatically convict us and then pressure us to roll over on Trump. That's what they're trying to do.
And so the thing, so the thing is Trump and Eric and Trump Jr. and Ivanka, they're all probably thinking, well, we didn't do anything wrong, so we have nothing to worry about.
That's right.
Innocence is no defense.
Yeah.
That's my new poster.
Those hotkeepers went in the Capitol.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Just walking through the doors of the Capitol like most Americans did that day is not a crime. Unless they tell you you're trespassing, you're not even trespassing. It doesn't make a difference. It's not about right or wrong or the truth. It's about getting you, President Trump.
Yeah. We got one more segment.
And
50 minutes left. If you can call back, Stuart, that'd be great. I got some questions. Yeah.
I'll call right back.
All right. Thank you. So what I want to do? Go ahead, Jonathan.
Thank you for using Global Tellink.
I'll let the panel. I'll shut up and let the panel. But let me just finish because that's one of the things that Judge Trevor McFadden said is that he was not satisfied that just walking into the Capitol was a crime. He said he forced the prosecution to prove that he knew that it was not allowed because this guy, Cooey Griffin, the Cowboys for Trump, he climbed over walls. And the judge says, look, if you're climbing over walls and all kinds of things like that, you probably knew that you weren't supposed to be there. But it wasn't enough just that he walked into the building, according to Judge McFadden.
And Stuart didn't even walk into the building. All right, so I want to go to Cindy when Stuart gets back and Josie. But Josie, just a caution. I don't want to talk about what might happen. I want to talk about what is happening. And if you have questions directly, for Stuart particularly, that's what I'll focus on in the time that we have left. I think it's fascinating. I think the whole idea that innocence is no defense, that they
this
can make up all this kind of stuff.
This
is a high tech. Exactly. This is a high tech lynching. Yeah. Yeah.
What's Stuart's family background? Is he married? Where are his family in this situation?
Jonathan, I think it's probably something we let Stuart answer when he comes back, probably.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think Jonathan's probably taking
his call.
And that's
not important.
Right now.
I just.
Well, he went over a little bit earlier.
This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using Global Tellink.
Government quality control. Just to make sure. Sorry, I'm having too much fun. All right, Stuart, are you back?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Cindy, you had a question for Stuart, and then we'll get to Josie.
I was just wondering what your family support is, and are they able to bring any attention to this?
My family's awesome. I mean, they support me 100%. They were willing. In fact, my cousins in California were willing to be my, I guess you'd call my supervisors for pre-detention release or pre-trial release. But the court, of course, turned deaf ears to that. But I've got strong family support, and I've got strong faith. I read the Bible every day, and my faith gets stronger and stronger. So I'm not going to despair. Just like Joseph being sent to Egypt for imprisonment, good will come out of this. That's how I see it. So I'm okay.
Yeah, I think you're making a statement. Your case looks better the more you stand strong, the more that you don't compromise, the more that you don't take a plea, and the more that you don't do what they want you to do. Your case is only getting better for yourself. I mean, I hate that you're in jail. Like I say, you should be out on bail. You should be able to be building your defense and doing this from the outside and raising money and working with Jonathan and doing all these things. But the fact that you're in jail,
it's
making a stand.
If I had been released, the judge was going to put some onerous restrictions, I would not have been able to interview with you. There's no way. So maybe in the long run, it's for the better, because I can actually talk now.
Okay. Well, that's why I like to let you talk. Any more comments you want to make, and then we'll get to Josie.
Just one small aside. I know Darren Beatty of the Revolver, basically defamed me as a Fed. Even if I was arrested, I'm still a Fed. I think that was driven by Pete Santilli, who's had a personal grudge against me, and so I would just like to extend an olive branch to Darren Beatty. He's like, look, man, I think you got snookered by Santilli. I encourage you to reconsider that. And all I want is a public retraction and apology. We're good. But if you don't do that, I'm going to have to sue you for defamation. But I don't think I think it's a good idea. I think conservatives and patriots should be, pointing our metaphorical guns outward, not inward. But I have to protect my good name. So I just encourage him to take another good look at this and just admit that he got snookered by Santilli. That's all he needs to do, and do a public retraction. And I understand, there's a lot of confusion about what happened that day, and no doubt they had informants and provocateurs in the crowd, and the FBI was all over that. So I get it, but the truth is the truth.
Well, see if we can get to Darren Beatty at Revolver. Jonathan, do you have any connections at Revolver? Do you know anybody there?
I do
Yeah, but that's a problem because they think, you know, Darren is stuck on thinking Stuart Rhodes is an FBI whatever. So I have his phone number and his text message, but
text him the link to the show.
That's
see what happens. Yeah. Josie, do you have a question or comment for Stuart?
I just want to say, hang on tight. Like Bianchi was saying, reparations, that will be coming, no doubt about it. And I am a friend with Coy for Trump, Cowboy for Trump. And
he was on the show.
Days with him in an event. Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
He was on the show.
I brought him into the show.
Yeah, that was great.
but he told us a lot while he was in Parliament, and you know, it's sad what we are seeing in America, and all we can do right now is pray. But I want to see a lot of the patriots outside in the jails, waking up all these people, because we don't hear it on the news, and people have kind of like put it to the side. And I don't think that's fair what's happening. A lot of the senators, Congress people, they should be bringing it up all the time, like the media reports over and over and over the lies, so it sticks into your head. And we need to let people know there's over 200 patriots in jail, and some of them are being tortured. You're pretty good because you're in Oklahoma, but the ones in D.C. are a total different story. Coy told us a bunch of stories. We know
that's
what's
right.
going on
yeah.
in D.C. So God
that's
bless
right.
you.
And the whole point is to
my dollar. Yes, God bless you.
And
we'll
the whole point is to coerce them into confessions, to fake confessions. You know,
yes.
And you had one patriot, Matthew Perna, just recently commit suicide, unfortunately, because he lost lost hope, you know.
But God bless you. I got to go. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks,
Josie. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you. Yeah, I mean, it's bigger than us.
Well,
I mean, we're the canary in the coal mine, and look, as a patriot leader, I knew I was risking this eventually, and that's okay, because that's what happens when you're a dissident as your country descends into a dictatorship. And so, you know, it's kind of like when Henry David Thoreau was in jail for refusing to pay taxes because he opposed the War of Mexico. A friend asked him, what are you doing in there? And his response was, what are you doing out there? If you're an honest man, a patriot, this choice is where you are when your government's going bad. So I take it like that. That's how I see it.
Yeah, it's an exemplary
even
character.
Right now, the great emphasis,
go ahead,
great right now, the greater emphasis should be on the defense fund. I can't imagine why come that haven't already been established, and the whole ordeal has went lost in the news, and what was coming out in the news wasn't totally the truth.
Well, we all have our individual, you know, gives and goes. I have one for my attorneys from Dallas. But what Jonathan's trying to do is put together a larger group that can just, you know, take in larger donations that are tax deductible for all the defendants. And you're right, it should have been done a long time ago, but finally it's getting done. And like I said, it's incumbent on President Trump and also his wealthy supporters, I mean, Mrs. Adelson, you know, Gary Haven, people out there, there are billionaires in Texas that I personally know, like Gary Haven's one of them. They need to step up and defend us. And because if they don't, what's going to happen is this dictatorship is going to be emboldened. They're going to take Trump down and put him in prison, which is what they want to do, and they'll probably die in prison. And they're going to keep going, keep rolling through the rest of the MAGA movement, just like it did in any country they've taken over. They want to suppress and chill free speech and political participation, make you afraid to speak out, make you afraid of being snitched out by your neighbors and taken by the secret police. So now is the time to stand up hard and firm across the entire political right.
That's what we're trying to do here. In fact, I'm amazed at the apathy and the lack of concern of this. I remember back when the hostages were in Iran, there was a news program called Nightline started by Ted Koppel. And every single day they spent the entire show on that hostage crisis. And it made a difference. People were always aware of it. Why we don't have a daily press conference, you know, from the gelding old party on this issue is staggering. Why there isn't a major journalist, you know, I'm talking major TV, well-known person, like even a Tucker Carlson, not having a daily report. And what's going on with the January 6th folks is beyond my understanding. And the other thing I find interesting, and this is a question for Jonathan, is if you remember the Scopes Monkey Trial, the evolution trial back in Tennessee, I think it was in the 20s, Clarence Darrow, probably the best-known lawyer in the country, went up against William Jennings Bryan, probably the best-known politician in the country, everybody watched that trial. It was filmed. You know, it was a famous movie that was actually pretty politically biased, Inherit the Wind, with Spencer Tracy and Frederick March. But the point was that a major trial like that with those kind of lawyers attracted national attention, probably worldwide attention. And so I'm wondering, where are the Lawrence Tribes? Where are the Alan Dershowitz? Where are the, you know, if Ethel Bailey were still around, he'd take this case. You know, where Johnny Cochran, I don't know if he's still around. Where are the major lawyers that would, you know, the biggest attorneys in the country that should be making huge cases out of this? Jonathan? And they would be able to raise the money, too.
Beats me. I tried to get a good friend, Joe DeGeneva, who knows my members of my family, and he's retired. We finally got through to him, and he says, no, he's moved to Florida. I tried to get Jonathan Turley interested, who he won't take sides, but he's a raging purist, I think, about the law. And he hasn't answered me. Okay. I wanted to be an expert witness. Beats me. I don't get it. I mean, I just don't understand.
You'd think there'd be one conservative lawyer that wanted to make a name for themselves, like F. Lee Bailey did with the Sam Shepard case. This is a case that's made for someone to come in and be a crusader and do the right thing,
like
Clarence Darrow. You know, go ahead.
Look at Jerry Spence. I mean, the famed trial lawyer, he came to the defense of Randy Weaver, who was a white supremacist, but he did not murder people. And so Jerry Spence, pro bono, for free, defended Randy Weaver and got him acquitted and proved the government planted evidence and lied on the stand. He just tore him apart. That's what it takes, is a lawyer like that who has that kind of capability. But unfortunately, they're not stepping up. They would require money, like $500,000 down for some of these big attorneys. That's what they want.
So we need Jonathan's organization. Jonathan, do you have some contact information for those folks? Are you public yet? Is this something that can be shared?
It's just getting organized. We need to set up a – I mean, that's the next job is we have to do is – it's the Patriots Legal Defense Fund, Inc., Virginia Corporation, but we're going to, you know, set up a website and go out with some professional fundraising, because that's the problem. It's like Stuart Rhodes' Give, Send, Go. I think he's set a goal of $250,000, and people have given about $11,000. But then it's never gotten any news attention either. It's like the truckers raised $6 to $10 million three times over with news attention. So over the next week, we'll be getting a website, and we have to get credit card processing things that they won't cancel us. You know, the Oath Keepers have been canceled their website and their credit card processing, you know, three or four times, even before January 6th. So the reason it's taking us a little bit longer is to make sure it's bulletproof and it can't be deplatformed and attacked.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to suggest that Matt Gaetz get this to President Trump, and then he makes some kind of address of this. He's got a rally this Saturday. I mean, he needs to start talking about this. And let's see if he can, you know, raise some funds and do some things like that. We only got about 3 minutes left. First of all, Stuart, do you have anything else you want to add to this? And I'm going to go to Cindy and Bianchi. Stuart?
What was that again? I couldn't hear you.
No, I was going to say, do you have anything else you want to add? We've got like 3 minutes left, and then I'll see if we can take a couple more quick questions.
It's important that all the defendants stay strong and not plead out. And here's the problem is that the defense attorneys, a lot of times, they will negotiate with the prosecutors to fabricate a lie. And they have no problem at all. This is a corrupt judicial system. They have no problem at all with encouraging their client to roll over and test a lie. And that's perjury. But yet it's being done. Suborning of perjury is being done across the board by the prosecutors and also by complicit defense attorneys. It needs to stop.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you get them off for prosecutorial misconduct and get some of the judges removed for you know, violating their basic, you know, constitutional duty. Cindy, do you have a quick question, and then we'll get to Bianchi.
No, just, you know, you'll be in my continue to be in my thoughts and prayers, and thank you for standing up for the truth.
No problem. And hey, just I can bear this. This is not an issue for me. So other guys can't. I'm not claustrophobic. I can handle it. It's no big deal. So don't feel like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, like I said, this is just what I'm required to do.
Well, I'm glad you can do it, because there's a lot of people that couldn't. And like I said, the person that lost hope and committed suicide couldn't, unfortunately. So stay strong.
If I die in custody, it was murder, not suicide. Just count on that.
No, say it. This is why I make these records of these podcasts. You know, it's live now, but it's podcasts, and everything that you say, you know, will be sticking around for a while. So feel free to say it. Jackie, do a quick comment, and then I'll get to
the
last minute.
This is an example of a modern-day high-tech lynching. And Jonathan, make us aware of fundraisers so we can contribute and also get the word out.
Yeah.
Jonathan?
Absolutely, we'll do. And,
okay.
I was going to say something, but I think you're out of time. And
we got 1 minute left, and I'm using every minute.
I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
That's okay, Stuart. Anything else? Any other message you want to get out?
I'm so glad that you were.
Oh, Stuart's gone.
Yeah, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, I'm blessed that I can still talk. So, you know, our rights, at least my rights of free speech, that will talk to you on the phone, has not yet been suppressed, but that could be coming. So the final thought is Americans don't despair. Hang together. Like Ben Franklin said, hang together, hang separately. Understand where you're at. You have an illegitimate regime over you that is going to keep persecuting people unless you stand together and stand firm. You have to stand together now across the board, from your local town meetings to your county commissioners meetings, to your school boards, but all the way up to the Congress trying to stand up. And the Republicans in Congress should be holding hearings of their own right now on January 6th.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's absolutely for sure. Okay, we've got about 10 seconds left. Stuart, you're welcome anytime you want to call in. Jonathan's on Thursdays. You know the times. All right, let's hide it for now. We'll do it again tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock. Jonathan, thank you much for bringing
you
Stuart on.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Actually, we don't.
we're actually
out of time. There we go. So thank you all very much. Greg Pangloss for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. I will be sharing this show, and this is going to be going out in a press release. So lots of news on this. And our legislative website, writeyourlaw.com. Stuart, I'll tell you about that next time. WriteYourLaws for those who want to participate and be citizen legislators. And I'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Central Time, and we'll see you then.